all of you making the effort to be here. We have two bills to hear today. We're going to do the easy and quick one first. That is House Bill 2254, and we are hereby opening a public hearing only on House Bill 2254, and I am the subcommittee of the full committee. As we have some members gone, there will be more showing up shortly. I certainly hope so. And as soon as we can get them here, we will. So would you come forward, Deputy Director Craig? And before we get started, if you've signed up on the sign-up sheet, our new sign-up sheets have, and Ray, could you give me one of them, please? What I'm going to tell you next applies only to government officials and lobbyists. If you are not one of those, then disregard most of what I'm going to say in the next few moments. By signing this form, you recognize that you are under, if you are a government official and if you are a lobbyist, you are under ORS 244020 and ORS 171764 regarding truthful testimony and no false statements in public or in submitting false written materials. If you are here to testify as a general member of the public, this does not apply to you. However, we, of course, still want your testimony to be full, factual, and accurate. And the reason that we say that is because quite often the proceedings and the testimony that's taken here is used in court at later dates to determine legislative intent. And so we want to make sure that we're all very accurate. Now, having said that, we're joined by Vice Chair Gilman. Good to have you here. We're going to get hard at it. Mr. Deputy Director, welcome. For the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Chuck Craig, Deputy Director for Department of Agriculture, and with me is Roger Huffman, the Administrator of our Animal Health and Identification Division. Mr. Chair, we're here to present reluctantly to you a bill to update fees for brand inspection, essentially to compensate for inflation that has occurred over the past 12 years since the last fee increase. As you, I'm sure, know, Oregon law requires verification of ownership of livestock prior to slaughter, animals leaving the state, sale at public auction, change in ownership. The program serves an important deterrent to theft and also a crucial traceability function in the event of a food safety type issue related to disease or the need to trace back the origin of a disease to an index herd. Last fee increase occurred in 1991. Since that time, inflation has caused costs to rise above the incoming program revenue. Program's account balance has been steadily declining for several years, and it will be exhausted by 2005. So we probably won't make it through another biennium until the next session. That's why we have to come to you. We started consultation on what to do about this 18 months ago with the affected industries. We presented a variety of options that included changing program services and so forth, and showed clearly to the people that use the services what the issues were. They decided that they want to maintain the program the way it is and wanted us to raise the fees by a reasonable amount to maintain the program. So the fee increase is supported by the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, the Oregon Dairy Farmers Association, and Farm Bureau. I believe they're here to speak to you themselves about the bill. We passed out a packet with a lot of documentation that shows how we've reduced costs, what our account balances are doing, and so on like that for your consideration, Mr. Chair. If you want us to walk through any of that, we can do that. But in the interest of time, I think I'll just pause here and see what you want us to do.
Well, thank you, Chuck. I appreciate that. I don't think we'll take time to go through this today. We do have several people signed up. Roger, do you have anything to add?
Chairman Krupp, no, I don't. I'm certainly willing to ask.
For the record, state your name. My fault.
Excuse me. Roger Huffman, Administrator of the Animal Health and Identification Division for the Oregon Department of Agriculture.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, if I might add one thing here to give you the magnitude of what's happening. The fee, the re-recording fee is being changed or proposed to be changed from $35 for 2 years to $100 for 4 years, with the four-year program being staggered so that we have a more even revenue flow.
Okay. So you had spent a fair amount of time with the industry and talking about why this was necessary. And it's been 12 years since you had your last fee increase for the brand inspection program, correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Have you had in that time the same number of people involved in the process from ODA? Have you had the same number of staffers out there from the department helping to maintain the monitoring of the program?
Actually, Mr. Chair, our staff has declined.
Has declined.
We have become more efficient.
Okay, very good.
And our number of inspections per hour performed has gone up steadily.
That's what we like to hear. Members, questions? Welcome, Representative Hobson.
Thank you, sir.
For those of you who don't know, Representative Hobson from the Tillamook area is not a standing member of this committee. She requested to come here today as the second bill will affect her area greatly. We welcome her.
Thank
glad
you.
To have her here. And if I could get the rest of my committee here, we could actually vote on something. But at any rate, since seeing no further questions, anything else to add for us on this issue?
Not that I have, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. Chair would like to call Frank Delzer, and I'm going to call Joshua. Is it Mann? Are either one of those gentlemen here on this bill? I don't see them. Okay. Then we'll have Katie Fast and Greg Addington, two of these lobbyists that are subject to the truthful testimony law. I say that tongue-in-cheek, folks. Welcome, and for the record.
Chair Krupp, members of the committee, for the record, Katie Fast representing the Oregon Cattlemen's Association. The Oregon Cattlemen's Association is in support of 2254, which will increase the renewal fees on state recorded brands. A strong brand program is critical to our industry. Oregon law only recognizes brands for ownership of cattle. And cattle theft is still occurring and still a concern of the industry. And the program that the department has set up is a deterrent for criminals in cattle theft. The department has done an excellent job of working with the industry on this issue. They came to us over a year ago when they realized that their revenues were declining and not meeting current expenses. And they worked with the industry on a program that the industry fully supported, taking in our concerns and making, I believe the department's going to make the program more efficient as well. With the four-year renewal, we'll decrease some costs. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Members, questions of Katie? All right, thank you. Greg, for
thank
the record.
You. For the record, Mr. Chair, my name is Greg Addington. I'm Associate Director of Governmental Affairs for the Oregon Farm Bureau. Also here to support House Bill 2254. The programs that will benefit from the fees, theft investigation, ownership inspections, brand recordings, as Katie said, critical to the industry. I'd also like to echo her thoughts about and compliment the department on their job in working with the industry, getting the information out in a timely manner and presenting alternatives for the folks to look at. So I'll leave it at that and just offer our support for it.
Okay, members, questions of Greg? Hearing none, so once again, for the record, both of you guys are willing to sign on to paying more taxes, right?
Chair Krupp.
In the form of an increased brand registration fee.
Yes, and this will be very few times we will come for that.
I would have thought so. Okay. Thank you both very much. We appreciate it. Let's see. Is Frank Delzer or is it Joshua Mann or Marin? Either one. You come forward, sir, please. Welcome. Have a seat. And please state your full name for us.
My name is Franklin Delzer. I live here in Salem. And I'm just a plain old fisherman in support of this 22, what is it? 22.
You know what, Frank?
What?
We're not quite on that bill yet. Well, we're going to be.
You told me.
Well, you were signed up for the other bill. That's fine.
Well, put me down for a yes on this.
All right.
And if you really want to be efficient, you won't drag me back in here.
All right.
There you go.
I got that.
Legislature.
Very good. All right. Do we have any more testimony on House Bill 2254? All right, hearing none, we're going to close a public hearing on House Bill 2254. Members, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2254. Ray, this bill has a subsequent referral, does it not?
Yes, Mr. Chair, it has a subsequent referral by prior reference to the Ways and Means Committee.
Okay, members, we'll be sending this bill down to the Ways and Means Committee as a courtesy to let them continue to massage it and explore it even further. So the chair would entertain a motion from one of the members.
Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Smith has moved that House Bill 2254 be submitted with a due pass?
Yes, to Ways and Means.
To Ways and Means Subcommittee by prior reference. Yes, Representative Nelson, discussion.
Yes, thank you very much. Mr. Chair, you know, I am very, very aware of the financial condition of the citizens of this great state. And I find it very alarming that we would be increasing this fee. I also understand that our ranchers are not in business without this fee because they certainly need the protection. So I will only, as a courtesy to them and to you, vote yes on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. I do appreciate those comments. They echo many of the feelings that I have also. Any additional comments, members? Hearing any objection? Hearing none. House Bill 2254 is hereby recommended to the Ways and Means Subcommittee by prior reference with a due pass recommendation. Close a work session on House Bill 2254. And now what you've all waited for is we're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2260. And let me just ask this. We have 9 pages of folks signed up to testify, and that's a lot for us to get through. We're going to try and run till about 3:30. I'm not sure I can go any further than that because I think somebody else needs this room after that. So what we would like you to do is I only want to hear from members of the general public on this issue. If you're a paid lobbyist and you're around the building, please come back. We'll have additional hearing testimony on this bill at a later date. So what I'd like to each one of you that come forward, I'd like you to try to boil your comments down just in the shortest time frame that you can to still say the things that you think are really important. And obviously, you took time out of your busy lives to come here today and tell us what you think, and I want to hear from every single one of you, and I want you to know that. I'm going to try to be generous to you, but I'm also going to try to keep you moving along here because I would like to hear from all of you. So, with that, the chair would like to call Chuck Smith, Paul Hanneman, and Jerry Dove. Dove? Doyle? Dove? Is it? Please come forward, if you would, please, all at once. I'm going to try to take you in threes, if at all possible. I'll just call out your name. Thank you. Welcome, Chuck. Why don't you go first? For the record, state your name, please.
For the record, my name is Chuck Smith from Medford, Oregon. I'm a member of the External Budget Committee for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I had the privilege of traveling around the state hearing public testimony on this when they ran the proposal in front of people. To my surprise, a vast majority of hunter and fishermen support this. I support it. There's a lot of work to do out there, and we're not going to get it done without money. I, too, am worried about the economy of the state and people's attitude towards it. But I think the hunter and the fishermen are willing to step up to the plate and keep these programs that we need going.
Very good.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Any questions of Chuck, members? Hearing none. Paul?
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Paul Hanneman for the record, Cloverdale, Oregon. Mr. Chair, my statement is being passed around, and it's exactly 3.5 lines long. The statement is in support of House Bill 2260, but it's limited in the aspect of providing funding for coastal anadromous fish hatcheries and coastal salmonid production, and only via a legislatively established dedicated account for those facilities. And further, I note that there are several other viable options, some through legislative proposals that have been submitted to you already, and those options are available to this committee or to the Ways and Means Subcommittee also, as we see it, for funding those coastal facilities. And thank you so much.
Thank you, Paul. Quick question. Ray, does the current funding for this program, is it in a dedicated account?
Mr. Chair, I will have to take a look and get back to you on that with an answer.
Actually, I think the man we can ask is standing in the back of the room. Why don't you go chat with him while we continue to get testimony? Jerry, welcome. For the record, state your name, please.
Thank you very much. My name is Jerry Dove. I'm president of the Tillamook Anglers Corporation in Tillamook. Definitely want to thank you, Chair Croft, members of the committee, for hearing this thing today and allowing this large crowd to show up. And a very special hello to Representative Hobson from Tillamook, and thank you for joining the committee today. We fought this battle for a long time, too long, too many times, trying to save our local fish hatcheries. As you can see by the crowd here today, hatcheries are extremely important to the sportsmen of Oregon, and not just Oregon. From all over, actually all over the world. There are guides in this room here today that will probably testify to the fact that they have clients that come from all over the world to fish in Oregon. It's a big hit to the economy, not just in our local areas, but in the entire state of Oregon. In about 1993, the Oregon Coastal Zone Management Association did a study of the economic impact of fishing in just Tillamook County alone. And in that particular year, it amounted to approximately $11 million. If hatcheries are allowed to close, bearing in mind in Oregon now you can only keep hatchery fish, with the exception of fall chinook. After about a four-year cycle, we will no longer have fishing in Oregon as we know it today. In Tillamook County, we have 7 major rivers flowing into 3 bays. We have hatchery runs just about year-round. If these hatcheries are closed and after the four-year cycle, we would be left with nothing but approximately a two-month fall fishery. Tillamook County could not take another economic hit. We're still trying to recover from the floods of 96 and 98, and just last Friday, we're hit with another flood. We've all but lost our logging industry, and this restrictions on farming are making it tougher all the time. With the great returns of these hatchery fish, our businesses in Tillamook County are busy during the fishing season. The hotels, motels, campgrounds are full. Service stations, tackle shops, boat and auto repairs can't handle the crowd. The other businesses in the county that aren't even fishing related are busy because of the people that come to Tillamook County during the fishing season. In talking to people that sell license and tags in the various stores, and I think there's a gentleman here that will testify to this today, you never, ever hear somebody walk up to buy a tag or a license and say, what does it cost? They want that tag, and they're willing to pay whatever the cost is. As Lindsay Ball pointed out the other day to you folks, folks in Oregon, sportsmen, are in big favor of this House Bill 2260. We want to see this bill pass so we can save our fish hatcheries, our landowner programs, our field biologists. When ODFW held their town hall meetings last spring around the state, the support was unanimous that we raise these fees if we can save these programs. In Tillamook County alone, we had over 400 people attend that meeting. And there was full support of raising the fees to cover whatever it would take to keep our hatcheries open. We also pressed at the same meeting, as well as some of the other town hall meetings, that we introduce a shellfish license and with over 400 people who were at the Tillamook County meeting, there was only one person that objected to that. Lindsay Ball also reported to you the other day that the department has received literally thousands and thousands of letters and emails in support of this fee. I would like to take just a moment, if I may, and just show you. I won't present you with these petitions today because Tillamook Anglers has put these together, and we are strictly a nonprofit volunteer corporation, so we really can't afford to copy all these, and we'd like to save them for our records. But I'd like to show you a petition that was signed here about a year ago. There's about 45,000 signatures here asking that the hatcheries do not close in the state of Oregon. This petition here was asking people if they would be willing to pay more money to keep our hatcheries open. And there's a yes and a no. And if you look at these, there's probably another, I'm guessing, 5,000 signatures here. And out of the 5,000, I don't think you'll see more than about 15 or 20 no's. Just the last 3 days since I left here from the hearing Thursday, Jenny at ifish.com put a... Well, welcome, Senator Dukes. Thank you for joining us.
The chair would like to welcome Senator Joan Dukes from...
Swenson.
I don't know where that is.
That's in Clatsop County.
That's in I know it's in Clatsop, but is
that's
that close
to... Columbia, Tillamook Rural, Western Washington County, and a piece of Multnomah.
Okay.
These are some of my constituents sitting in front of me.
Very good. Well, glad to have you here, and I know you want to share some thoughts, and Jerry's going to finish up in just a moment.
You bet. This survey was done just in the last 3 days by email, and there's over 500 yes in favor of the fee increase that came through over email. I've got some other comments here that came through email with the crowd here. I won't take time to read any of those.
Thank you.
But the support has been absolutely overwhelming. I have to admit I was a little concerned about the crowd today, whether they would show. I guess I didn't have to worry from the looks of it. Let me just go into one quick thing. We operate the Whiskey Creek Volunteer Salmon Hatchery in Tillamook. Tillamook Anglers do. If we lose these hatcheries, we're not just going to lose the state-run fish hatcheries. We have several projects that are done outside of the state hatcheries but are dependent upon the state hatcheries for the supply of eggs. We have the South Fork Prison Camp at the South Fork Prison Camp off of Highway 6. They raise fish there. They are supplied the eggs from the department. If the department closes Trask Hatchery, that program goes away. We have the Nestucca Wilson Wild Steelhead Broodstock Program. If the hatchery closes, we lose that program. On the Nestucca, Rhodes Pond, the Nestucca Group has the Fall Wild Fish Program, plus the Wild Broodstock. If Cedar Creek closes, that goes away. And then we have one in a... I could get somebody to bring those pictures up real quickly. Let me just share a couple pictures with you. We operate the Whiskey Creek Volunteer Hatchery. And if the state hatchery closes, if you'd hold up the picture of the hatchery. There's a hatchery that we started about 14 years ago. If you were to build that hatchery today, you would spend somewhere around $1 million to $1.5 million. It's taken us 15 years to totally build it at absolutely no taxpayer expense whatsoever. It's all volunteers, fundraisers, memberships. We get our eggs from the state. If the state hatchery closes, that hatchery there that costs nobody a dime goes away. It involves literally thousands of volunteers yearly. We have two large events. In April, we do our fin clipping. We fin clip all the fish. And as you can see by the picture there, we usually have about 400 to 500 volunteers show up to fin clip all of these fish. Last year, we did a record. We did a little over 100,000 fish in 3.5 hours. That's with volunteers. That proves that the volunteers care and that the sportsmen care about this resource. The last picture I want to show you and share a story with you. We release all of our fish by the end of July. They're spring Chinook. We set them out into the Tillamook system for people to hopefully catch in 4 years. But we depend on tourists coming by the facility. We average about 150,000 tourists through the facility in a year's time. And we depend on them to come in. If we have no fish, of course, they're not going to stop. The department donates to us 1,200 rainbow trout every year. And the tourists come in and see these trout, spend a few dollars, helps the project. Now, we have to get rid of those fish before we bring our new ones in. So what do we do? In September, we sponsor a program. This will be our 13th year of doing this. We sponsor a day for fishing with kids with disabilities. We bring anywhere from 400 to 500 kids from all over the state of Oregon and Washington in to fish for these fish. If Trask Hatchery closes, if Cedar Creek closes, we lose this entire project. I'll close with a story about our handicapped fishing day, and I hope I can get through it. I've told this story probably 500 times, and I almost lose it every time, but it's a true story, and it just really shows kind of what this means to all of us. Little boy was about ready to leave about 4 years ago. My daughter happened to be out there, and she came over and she said, "Dad, you have a very, very unhappy little boy over here." So I went over, and he was in a wheelchair. And I says, "What's the matter, young man? Didn't you catch your fish?" He said, "Yes, I caught my four fish." We allow each child to catch four. We ice them down, bag them. And I said, "Then what are you so unhappy about?" He says, "I thought I was going to get to keep my fishing pole." And I looked at that little guy, and I said, "Doggone it, you know, you're going to keep a fishing pole." And I went and got a little pole and gave it to him. And the little farmer, he still wasn't happy. And I said, "What's the matter now?" He said, "Well, it doesn't have a bobber on it." That's, well, by golly, I got a bobber, and I put it on it, and I had a brand new Tillamook Angler hat on, and I took it off. He had a hat on. I took his hat off. I put my hat on his head, and I says, "You're now an official Tillamook Angler, and we'll see you back here next year." He looked me in the eye and says, "No, Mr. Dove, I'll be in heaven with Jesus by then." And that's what we're going to lose if these state hatcheries close. Thank you for your time, and we would certainly recommend that you pass this on with a due pass recommendation. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Members, any questions?
Mr. Chair, thank you for the courtesy of allowing us to go first. I did note that Representative Terry Thompson, former member, is in the audience, and he had to leave by three, but I think he's in the other hearing room. Thank you again so much.
Thank you, Paul. And before you leave, Ray, do you have an answer to the question I asked in regards to dedicated account?
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The funds are other funds that are generated through license and tag sales, and they're deposited in the Wildlife Fund. The Wildlife Fund is distributed to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife per legislatively approved budget, which directs those funds to specific program areas. The short, non-technical answer is yes.
Okay, thank you. Representative Nelson, you had a question?
Oh, thank you. I'm not sure I got the names right, Mr. Chair. Chuck, Paul, and Jerry, is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. I have a concern for those who cannot afford the license if this increased amount. Do we have any alternate for those seniors and others that are really living on fixed incomes that aren't getting any better?
I use myself as an example. I am retired and on a fixed income, and no, I do not have PERS. We have weighed and weighed and weighed that, and we originally talked of advising or asking the department to only raise tag fees rather than license fees for exactly the reason you just stated. The other day when Lindsey Ball presented you with the bill, I believe he stated that every time license fees go up, there is a slight drop in the number of fees or tags sold, but the dollar amount goes up. And in this situation, I think if we're going to continue to have fish in Oregon that we can fish for, we're going to have these hatcheries, and I think we honestly feel the only way to do it is to raise these fees.
All right, Mr. Chair.
Okay, quickly. Thank you.
Okay. As a fisher, I'm, you know, glad that y'all want to preserve our activities, but there must be a very convincing story being told that there is no way that we can go back to zero-based budgeting in this Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and root out any unnecessary expenditures, because I've not seen that document produced in order to do this. And by the way, I did sponsor the bill on shellfish.
Very good. Thank you for that. And, of course, I don't feel like I'm a person to answer that question that you just asked. In fact, I'm not sure if anybody here is. Mr. Ball would probably be the one to answer that. I don't know what else to say other than the fact that if we don't keep these hatcheries open, and we honestly feel a fee is the way to do it, the entire state of Oregon is going to feel the economic hit of it. And, Mr. Chair, if I may, I would like to make one other comment. The other day, the question was asked of Mr. Ball if any of these fee increases included the COLA. And I know that the governor and the legislature is contemplating not granting that. I think you'll find that the people in this room would like to see this bill passed with those fees in there, regardless if the COLA is granted or not, because there is definitely room out there to use these dollars.
Okay. Members, with that, we're going to have to move to the next group of witnesses.
Thank you very much.
Thank the three of you very much. I do appreciate it. Chair, I'd like to call, before I do call anyone else, I'd like to allow Senator Dukes to share with us a few thoughts, as that's why you've come here today. And also Representative Hobson, if you'd like to enter in testimony. It's entirely up to you, whichever you prefer. Senator Dukes, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I'm already behind time for Ways and Means, a Natural Resources Subcommittee, as a matter of fact. And I'm here today to speak in favor of the increased fees. I've served on Ways and Means for a while, and I've been through the ODFW budget a time or two, and we have cut. They've had huge revenue shortfalls, and we have cut programs, and we've asked endless questions, and we've cut some of these below what the public, as you can see in front of you, believes is essential services. They're the ones who are paying the fees and buying the licenses, and they believe they have a very strong sense of what it is they want in return for them. And we've not only been threatening with hatchery closures, but with other programs over the closures over the years of going down below where they believe we need to be. And that's why I can go pretty much anywhere in my district and find enormous support for this increase. It's an agency that we need to keep intact, and we are threatening them being able to be intact. They don't get much of anything out of the general fund, and what they did get, they get a heck of a lot less of it. So we're talking about filling in those shortfalls with some other revenue, and you've got a whole lot of willing buyers out there who are interested in doing it. I am pleased to say, and I would not have said this a few years ago, that the agency is very well run today, that its accounts are in good shape, that they are managed well. It is fiscally sound, and we'd like to keep it that way, and this bill will help us be able to do that.
Thank you, Senator. Representative Hobson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, am here in support, and I don't have anything to add to what Senator Duke said. I thought she covered it very succinctly, and I'm really eager to hear the testimony. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. And with that, we'll move on. The Chair would like to call Ben Hathaway, Stanley Steele, and Phil Adams, if the three of you would come forward. And if you have written testimony and copies, submit it to David there. Thank you. Welcome. For the record, please state your name. Thank you.
Ben Hathaway, Tillamook Sporting Goods, Tillamook, Oregon.
Go ahead, Ben. Why don't you...
One of the reasons that I'm here is I'm definitely in support of the bill. What we've done is I have a document here showing that just one of our stations, and actually we need more stations. We have a moderately successful sporting goods store. It's approximately 18,000 square feet. We need more terminals. In the dates January 1, 2002 to December 31st, 2002, I have here the checks that we wrote to ODFW were $116,300.71. We need more terminals. We've also taken a poll, and I was behind those particular monitors. We, during the fall, spring, Chinook season, we open at 5 a.m. and close at 7. And what we've done is we contacted, as the people came up, and asked them if they, in fact, would be opposed or in support of a fee generation. And we told them the approximate amount, $5, $10 combination. Could be as high as $15. We interviewed 1,127 persons, and we had one dissent, and of the rest we had 1,126 individuals, which in fact were for it. So what I would say to you is it's extremely difficult for any individual. It's probably something that's pretty esoteric. I wouldn't know how an individual would glean the amount of money that's spent with the motels, the hotels that Jerry Dove talked about, the gas stations, the restaurants, the people come up there from all over the country. Approximately 18% of the people in June, July, and August come from out of state. So it's out of state money. It's new money that's dumped into it. We're having enough problems in Tillamook, Oregon, as you know, in the lumber industry. You may or may not know, since I own three dairy farms, that we're having some problems in the dairy industry as well. Milk support price has gone down. I myself am losing two of the farmers that I lease farms to, very large farms. So we need and support this. We need to support it. And we, the end user, which I think is the fair thing, in other words, to not burden the taxpayer anymore, but the end user has supported this almost to the person. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you, Ben. I appreciate those thoughts. Stanley, welcome for the record.
Stan Steele from Corvallis, Oregon. I'm a retired Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife Officer and now have a guiding business on many of the coastal rivers as well as some of our inland waters. The main reason I'm here is the 100% support of the increase. I think that ODFW does have to have budgetary integrity represented by support of this bill. It's a we have direct impact upon local businesses in our Alsea Valley, one I can speak very dearly of. I've been there for over 30 years. It's a valley that has had the timber industry cut way back. Agricultural is not even playing a part in that valley anymore. The Forest Service is a non-represented entity. But angling is still somehow hung in there. We have two hatcheries on the Alsea, one being Fall Creek and the other being the Alsea Steelhead Hatchery. Both of them have had major, major budgetary cutbacks in the last 15 years. Hatchery trout, hatchery steelhead, and hatchery salmon. To some people, those are very, very vile creatures. To most of us who angle in Oregon and have all of our life, they are what we really pursue on basically a daily basis. There's been a lot said about catch and release of wild fish, and there should be a lot said. We are supportive of catch and release programs, but the common, ordinary angler, the 14-year-old boy on the Willamette River, to the 70-year-old gentleman standing on the bank of the Alsea River, likes to retain, occasionally, a hatchery-reared fish. It's very, very important to maintain our hatchery programs. There are very few Oregonians who are not affected by ODFW in a positive way, whether it be in a non-game status or hatchery fish status. We are all living in probably one of the best states to enjoy our outdoors. But a key component to that outdoors is angling. A major component. We've heard of research dollars. Our Oregon State University has done a research on trying to quantify the amount of money that is actually brought in to Oregon just from its angling alone. It's a multi-million dollar industry. One that if we think we can maintain by wild fish, it's a smokescreen. We can't. One that you will see more markets close. You'll see G.I. Joe's directly affected by the reduction of hatchery fish. Large Oregon corporations. The McKenzie River is a good example of what I'm talking about. The McKenzie is the last stream on the west side that has hatchery trout put into it for a put-and-take fishery. The businesses on the McKenzie last spring were affected immensely by a cooling tower project just in muddy water runoff, turbidity. That cost, they feel, over $60,000 in a month to the McKenzie Valley economy. That's just from muddy water. Now take the 130,000 retentive or hatchery trout out of the McKenzie Basin, and that fishery will be gone, not just for the month, but for the calendar year. Over 60 guides alone working actively on the McKenzie. Example of cost. And I've heard that we were concerned about senior citizens' cost. We should be. But it's a user-pay-for sport. 18 holes of golf will cost less, are more than what we're asking for in our angling license fees. If you go down and have your car washed today, you're going to pay more than we're asking for an increase in your salmon steelhead tag. One car wash, one drive-through. Now, we get to use this for 365 days a year. The proposed fees, in my opinion, are way too modest. The day of the free lunch should be over. We want to pay and want to show our support for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife through our user fees. When we sit around the campfire in eastern Oregon and you talk about the price of your deer tag, you really aren't really concerned about that compared to the cost of gas that got you to your campfire. It's very, very economical to hunt and fish in Oregon when you look at just the fees. We feel there should be additional user taxes placed upon Oregon anglers. The tag for a wild steelhead, for example, I think there's going to be some more testimony, so I'm just going to just touch on these, should have an additional fee. Allowing the use of a second rod should have an additional fee. Fish hatchery sports through the tax checkoff that we do for non-game. Fish hatchery support. Not support for bighorn sheep. Not sport for lizards. But sport for hatcheries. The shellfish license. It baffles me for all my years of checking literally thousands of out-of-state people using this resource. And we have never charged for it. We charge for killing a coyote, but we do not charge for taking a razor clam. And we had a tremendous razor clamming season on the Oregon coast this year. It was fantastic. And it brought in literally hundreds of thousands of dollars from economies from Florence to Tillamook. And many of these people were our neighbors to the east, north, and south, doing it free. There's also another thought that we've felt, and many of us obviously are using drift boats in our daily occupations, and have felt that, what's a drift boat used for? 90% of the time, it's an angling craft. What's wrong with having a drift boat license that 50% of that license goes to the State Marine Board for enforcement, drift boat landings, the other 50% of that goes to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife for hatchery programs. Because when we're out there in our aluminum or wooden drift boat, we are actively angling. And we understand that without hatchery fish, that's not going to exist. Now, there's going to be many more ideas come up in front of you in the next few minutes, I'm sure. But most of us are so supportive of this. I've yet to find someone who has said no. After 25 years of checking many thousands, not hundreds of thousands, of Oregon anglers, I doubt if I heard 10 nays in all the years about the license fees. But ODFW always has a problem getting them through committee. And I would urge you, as committee people, to understand that you're talking about the future of Oregon's angling, hunting, and fishing. Thank you.
Thanks, Stan. Appreciate that. Phil, you have prepared testimony for us.
Yes, I have.
And if you could just summarize that for us, really, what is it you want us to glean out of this as a committee?
For the record, my name is Phil Adams. I'm a district forester with Roseburg Resources Company. We're the landowning arm of Roseburg Forest Products, okay. A local privately owned company down in the Roseburg area. Real briefly, you have my testimony. I'll just go to my statement of support. And that is, Roseburg Resources strongly supports House Bill 2260, submitted by ODFW. This bill is a fee package increasing the cost of resident angling and hunting fees by an average of $5. The anticipated $10.1 million in revenue will offset critical program and staffing cuts necessary to balance the budget this biennium. As we understand it, HB 2260 deals strictly with other funds' monies generated through sales of tags and licenses. It does not include lottery, general or federal funds, revenues. It's our view that passage of 2260 as drafted is consistent with the EBAC recommendations that came through our town hall process earlier in the spring of 2002, and it represents the public will to continue support of targeted east and west side fish and wildlife programs and retention of critical field and local administration staffing. And that all comes through an acceptable public-supported increase in angling and tag fees. So appreciate the opportunity for input.
Very good. Thank you. And with that, gentlemen, we thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate
thank
your
you.
Testimony and your good thoughts. Chair would like to call Ralph Perkins, Dave Peters, and Norm Ritchie. And again, if you have prepared testimony, give it to David over here. If not, just feel free to come forward. The chair would also like to recognize former Representative Terry Thompson, now Commissioner Thompson. And did you want to say a few words, Terry? Okay. Be happy to do that. Welcome, and Ralph, would you start first and state your name, please?
Yeah, my name's Ralph Perkins. I'm a member of the Salmon Trout Advisory Committee. I'm representing myself today, however. I want to speak in support of this bill. I'm like a lot of folks, we don't like to pay more fees or taxes. However, the other alternative is not acceptable. For all the reasons you've already heard, we have to support this bill, and as has been stated before, I haven't talked to anybody who is opposed to paying these extra fees for the privilege of fishing in Oregon. I think I'll just leave it at that. I don't want to be redundant. You've heard lots of positive things already.
Thank you, Ralph. Appreciate that. Dave?
Yes, my name is David.
Oh, pardon me.
Thanks, Dave.
My name is David Peters. I'm from Coos Bay. I'm the president of the Coquille Step, immediate past president of the Salmon Trout Advisory Council of the Governors, past president of Coos River Step, past president of Coos Basin Step. So I think I can speak for a lot of STEP members. I'm also a past president of the Steelheader Southwest chapter. Most everybody, in fact, all the people that I've talked to support 2260. I find it's ridiculous that I'm sitting here trying to plead to you to increase my fees.
Dave, I can assure you some of us find that perplexing also.
But I really feel that it's not only vital for our hatchery program, because it is. I've watched over the years when we curtail production in hatchery and we get decreasing numbers. A lot of people decried that hatcheries were the result of the decreasing numbers and that they also were having an effect on wild fish. And that's why we had decreasing numbers of both. The last 2 years showed the lie. All of a sudden, the last 2 years, we got increasing numbers, both wild and hatchery fish. It isn't hatchery fish. Hatchery fish work, especially if it's done with native stock that you're using for your hatchery stock. I could give you a little, in fact, I will give you a little story about Noble Creek Hatchery, which is run by Coos River Step. I believe in the early 1980s, they started with about 13 fish they were raising in a hatchery program. This last fall, they had something like 8,000 Chinook returning. If hatchery fish don't work, explain how that happened. I have a hard time coming up with something that can say they don't work. We started with 13, today we have 8,000, which is way too many. We don't need that many. That's after the fishermen had a cling at them. So hatchery programs work, and they work great, as long as we use native stock. The other thing is the Department of Fish and Wildlife. That department, I've been 8 years on STAC, and I can see in 8 years a tremendous bunch of people working there. boy, I don't know how they keep their high morale, because I can't believe the way the department's been cut. It hurts. It hurts the people to stay in. I've watched a lot of people retire this last year, and basically it's because of cuts. They just go somewhere else. They retire, but they would have stayed if they had good conditions. We've got a tremendous director, Lindsey Ball. The legislature helped put him in there. He's done a tremendous job. We need to support him. And again, we're asking, ask us for the money to do it. Simple. So that's all I've got to say. We support it. And members that I have represented, they have one thing in common. They love hatchery fish. They love hatchery programs. And even hatch boxes work in certain situations. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Indeed, they do, in my opinion. Norm, welcome. Good to see you again.
Thank you, Representative Croft and members of the committee. My name is Norm Ritchie. I'm the president of the Association of Northwest Steelheaders, and I live in Portland, Oregon. I was also honored to be a member of the External Budget Advisory Committee. I won't talk too much about the support for this bill. The presence of all the people here and in the other room, I think, speak more eloquently to that than I could. The one point I'd like to make is that the advisory committee was made up not only of anglers, but landowners, agriculture, and other industries, all coming to the same consensus that we need these funds to keep the department adequately funded. Two questions were asked by the committee that I'd like to respond to. One, regarding, is this putting it over the top for those of limited income to buy fishing licenses? The fact is, the average trip for an angler to go fishing, even the occasional angler who's not into it as much as some of us are, is going to approach the total new fee that's being proposed, let alone the difference that we're talking about here. The amount of increase we're talking about here won't buy the fishing line. It won't buy the trip out to the river. It's not that much, and we're talking an annual amount. The other question regarding insinuation possibly that there is other areas to cut fat or anything like that. The truth is, I think the department is underfunded to be most efficient. We've already taken away the administrative staff in order to maintain biologists and so forth, so some of the administrative tasks are left to people qualified and paid to do more important things. I think that the staff needs to be increased to take care of those administrative expenses and other duties.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen. I do appreciate your thoughts. Chair would like to call Jim Woods. Oh, excuse me. Jim, come forward, and Terry Thompson, also come forward with the other gentleman that you have, if you would, please. And let me just explain for you, audience, I have a policy of when other members that are elected or other former members that are here to testify and are here from some distance, we try to get them up in front. That's just kind of a courtesy we extend to each other. Welcome, Terry, for the record.
Thank you. Terry Thompson, county commissioner now from Lincoln County, avid sportsman and also a commercial fisherman. First of all, I'd like to say that I have no direct impact to my commercial fishing business by the consequences of this bill passing. What I wanted to tell you was basically I was part of that audit committee that went through and really wasn't an audit committee, the committee that discussed the bill that you see in front of you, the fee increase bill, and was impressed by the wide variety of people that came from all over the state to work on this issue. The amounts you see there came from consensus after hours of deliberation on exactly how much we should increase different fees. It was a fair process. They went out in the public. In fact, I've never seen an agency go to the depths that they did to go out into the public and make contact with as many people as possible. That's why you see this room full of people, and you have an overflow room that I had to get Bob Jacobson from. Simply, I think it's a good bill should pass.
What I'd like to do is give it to Bob Jacobson. Bob Jacobson was a former fish commissioner, and we fish together all the time. There is one other side benefit to passing this bill. I fish quite a bit with Director Ball, and I worry without this bill, he won't be able to catch anything at all.
Well, unfortunately, Terry, I don't see him in the room, so he missed that. That's too bad. Bob, welcome, and for the record, state your name.
Thank you, Representative Croft. My name is Bob Jacobson. I'm a resident of Newport, Oregon. It pays to know friends in high places. I think I was the last person to sign up to testify, and maybe the first one one of the first ones to speak. So, I'm a lifelong Oregonian who, for over 50 years, has made the Oregon outdoors my second home. If there's hunting or fishing, or clam digging or crabbing, I've probably done it. Last night, as I was thinking about how to approach the fee increase issue with your committee, I went over my personal calendar for last year. What I found didn't surprise me. I spent all or part of approximately 100 days during 2002 in pursuit of the state's natural resources. For that privilege, and I want to reemphasize the word privilege because it is, I paid a little over $100 to the state for a sports pack license, or about $1 per day for every day I was in the field. $1 per day for every day I was in the field. What a tremendous bargain I got last year and for each of the preceding 50 years. Where else could I turn for that kind of enjoyment at that price? Certainly not the golf course, where a couple of friends of mine from Newport last summer visited a new course in southwestern Oregon, paid $200 for 18 holes, it took them 4 hours, at $50 an hour, and they didn't complain at all about the price. Certainly not in Alaska, where I spend a lot of time both hunting and fishing, where the price of licenses, in many cases, is double what we're requesting on this fee increase. I'm submitting to you that I'm hunting and fishing in one of the best states in the country, and I'd pay almost any price to retain that privilege if the money I spent for the privilege was dedicated towards ensuring that future generations will have the opportunity to continue to enjoy the pursuit of our natural resources as I have. As an 8-year member of the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission, I think I have a pretty good feel for the importance of assistant district biologists in the management of our natural resources. I also understand the importance of hatcheries to many of the fishermen who buy fishing licenses, including myself. I recognize that it is imperative to have a full complement of state police, fish, and game law enforcement officers in the field. I know the importance of wildlife damage and green forage programs to landowners who feed the state's big game. They're all positions or programs that are slated to be cut if we don't get a fee increase. The bottom line, in my opinion, in this equation is that if you don't adopt House Bill 2260, the loss of 50-plus positions and some very important programs within a department will adversely impact the management of our natural resources. As dollars diminish and programs are cut, opportunities for Oregonians to enjoy the pursuit of our natural resources in the future, as I have in the past, will be lost. I urge a due pass on House Bill 2260.
Thank you. Welcome,
Mr. Chair and the rest of the committee. Jim Woods, Secretary Treasurer at Tillamook Anglers. I'm just here to say that I'm in full support of House Bill 2260.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it, gentlemen. Now, the chair is going to, in order to make sure that I get to hear from, the committee gets to hear from everyone who's traveled more than 100 miles to get here, I'm kindly going to call those folks from now on up first. If you've marked on the sign-up sheet that you're over 100 miles away, I want to be sure that we get through you today, and then once we're through those, we'll start back through everyone else in the same order. So I'm going to call Steve Mathers and Mike Crawford at this time. Gentlemen, are you here? They might be in one of the overflow rooms. If you can hear me, please make your way here. Michael Carey. Michael, come forward if you would. Ron Gerber. Ron, why don't you come forward? And there they are right there. All right. Why don't you come in, gentlemen? Very good. Okay, thank you. Okay, Steve and Mike, why don't you state your names and share your thoughts with us quickly.
My name is Steve Mathers. I'm representing Oregon Guides and Packers today. We can speak strongly in favor of the proposal fee increases, but with one slight, as hunting outfitters in Oregon, we currently pay double the non-resident fees for those licenses, which right now we're paying $440 for deer and $670 for elk for our clients, and this would increase it to $599 and $793 respectively for those increases, and that's it's kind of pricing us out of the market. Other than that, we're strongly in favor of the increases.
So, Steve, let me get this right. You're in favor of the overall bill, but you kind of object to this one part where it seems like it's basically almost a double increase, correct?
Exactly.
And you think that'll price you out of the market?
Yes, I think it will. It'll be very close to competing with other states. It puts us above other our competing outfitters in other states.
Can you just repeat that? The specific increase you were talking about?
Okay. Well, as outfitters, it actually doesn't show this, but outfitters, we pay double the price of non-resident tags. And those costs increase pretty significantly. But as a whole, we're very in favor of this bill.
Mr. Chair?
Okay. Yes, Representative Nelson?
Steve, why do you pay twice as much?
It was a bill that we sponsored through legislature back in 95, I believe. It's a bill we sponsored to do that.
I just want to know why.
Oh, it's a guaranteed tag for outfitters so that we can sell tags to our clients so we have a market.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
I'd just like to alert everybody to this very issue because, you know, everybody here can be in this very same boat as these outfitters next time we come back to session. The same thing can happen. I mean, once we're established, then, you know, next time it doubles and redoubles. And I'm just wondering, have you outfitters considered that this bill includes a $3 million increase in the salaries of old DFW when the governor's called for a hold on salaries?
Well, I work very closely with ODF and personnel, and they're not, you know, I work with them every day, and I don't see a large, you know, wasting money. I mean, they're using it very efficiently. I'm very confident working with them regularly on a daily basis.
Question?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, is this typical with other neighboring states that their outfitters industry pays double their non-resident?
Well, it's not necessarily double, but it's a much higher percentage.
Mm-hmm. Follow up, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Well, and you said this would a doubling the increase is proposed would cause you to be price you out of the market, and from the information we get, that looks like the increase is proposed in this bill will bring our fee amounts up to just average with neighboring states. So it's really the fact, are you saying that you pay the double?
Yes.
Is what's pricing you out of the market.
Exactly.
Okay. Right. Okay, great. Mike?
Yeah, my name is Mike Crawford. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We hunt in eastern Oregon, central Oregon, and we depend on our outfitter tags to stay in business. But most of those communities that we do business in, they're highly dependent on hunter and recreation and tourism dollars over on our side of the mountains. And everybody we've talked to also, the price of the tags, we just got back from Virginia from a sports show. And our hunting license is low. It's $58.50 right now. It goes up to $76-something with this increase. No problem. And with the other states having troubles even getting hunters with CWD, you start deterring our game biologists from monitoring these new diseases, new predators that are coming into our state will not be as attractive as it is today. We are a sleeper state in this industry as far as our wildlife that we have, and we cherish it very much. But we need to have the right people on the grounds helping us maintain what we have, from ODF&W to our OSP officers. And like I'd like to reiterate with Steve, that one little flaw about how that bill got instituted, that the outfitters have to pay double non-resident fees, this will put us at the top of the list for the tags, not the hunting license, the tags. And if that could be readdressed so that it isn't 100% of the non-resident fee, but a different percentage to keep us competitive with the other states, is what we're looking for. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We'll, yes.
Would it be possible for you to get us an idea of the neighboring states, the average that the outfitter...
Montana has a tag now for deer and elk combination, mm-hmm. and it's right at $800. With this new increase, our deer tag alone would be $500, and then the elk tag would be over $700. So you're looking at, you know, almost $1,300. I haven't done the math, but almost $1,300 would put just $500 over Montana, which is the highest at the moment.
Okay, thank you.
So if we could stay in that ballpark, it would keep us going. And we help a lot of the small communities by bringing in all of the outfitter tags go to non-residents. It's out of the non-resident percentage. It doesn't affect any of the residents of Oregon at all. But we bring big dollars into those communities and even into ODF&W.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. Ron, welcome. For the record, state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. My name is Mike Carey.
Oh,
I'm the Regional Director for the National Wild Turkey Federation here in Oregon. We are a national organization with almost 500,000 members nationwide and in 8 different foreign countries. Here in the state, we have approximately 2,500 members. We are a pro-hunting organization. And we're here in full support of the House Bill 2260 that is placed before you today. We've always been extremely supportive of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. We've been watching over the last few years as cuts has affected some of our programs. Now, before I got up here, we listened to a lot of the folks on the fish side, and we definitely support the fish programs also, but we're very concerned what would happen without the passage to our wildlife programs. Eliminating those district biologists around the state, those are the folks that are on the ground, that are going, that deal with our landowner issues. They're the folks that relay from Portland what we want to do out here when it pertains to wildlife. Also, we're very concerned about the reduction in our urban state police. They're the folks that are going to keep things clean out there. Most of our hunting we don't have problems with. I hate to hear or read articles in the paper about this hunter did this or this hunter did that. It's not the true hunters that cause problems, it's the poachers. We don't consider them in our community to be hunters. We've looked at the increases our membership has. It brings us in line on a lot of our tags to some of our neighboring states. And as in the past and throughout the history of this great country, it has been the hunters and the fishermen, those sides of the conservation people that have paid for our hunting and fishing privileges and have brought back from their extensions a lot of our game animals. And with that, I'd like to thank you. And, again, we have our support.
Thank you, Mike. Gentlemen, thank you all very much. Mm-hmm. Chair would like to call Ron Gerber, Ron Bird, and Karen and Kelly Smith. Are they here? Please come forward, the four of you, if you would, please. Can we get them another chair out there? Please. We're going to grab you an extra chair, if you would. And on deck, getting ready to testify, will be Tim and Shauna Juarez and Terry Mulkey. Well, you were first, weren't you?
Welcome. Ron Gerber, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome. For the record, state your name, please.
Ron Gerber. I'm from Florence, Oregon. I'm here to speak in support of the bill. I'm going to speak primarily to fish issues because that's where my volunteer expertise, if you will, lies. I'm past president of the Florence Step Group. I'm on the Salmon Trout Enhancement or Advisory Committee. I had the pleasure to be chairman of that committee for a year. I'm just winding up 8 years of very enjoyable service there, and that gives you some idea of where I come from. I'd like to sort of depart from my prepared comments to say that Representative Nelson struck a responsive chord with me. I too am concerned and have spoken several times without much response that we need to take a look at where this license increase is leading us, because there are a lot of people being priced out of the market. The hunting and fishing community, particularly the hunting community, is a minority community, and it needs to maintain as much broad public support as it can. So right now the building's on fire, and we need to put the fire out, but once that all settles down, I think it would be appropriate, Representative Nelson, to go back and revisit this fee structure, this license structure, and see what we can do to accommodate people on low incomes and fixed incomes. If you're on SSI and you're making $542 a month, that's quite a bite out of your budget, and maybe the kids don't get any food, so you don't buy a fishing license. So I think there's some merit in Representative Nelson's suggestion. On to my prepared remarks, if you will. I'd like to speak not only in support of the bill and in favor of the bill, both as a hunter and a fisherman, but I'd like to put some of that in perspective. My expertise, because I'm from Florence, lies mostly in coho. I testified in front of this committee 2 years ago. I was complaining that 1,400,000 coho salmon were swimming past the end of the Siuslaw River jetty, fin clip salmon, that is, and we were only going to be allowed to catch 50,000 of them. And that was because the wild populations were so severely depleted. A certain amount of wild fish were going to get caught in that fishery, and a certain number were going to die, and that was the impacts that NIMS was going to allow on our returning wild fish. That has impacted the coastal economy substantially. Just the coho alone, the ODF&W estimated in 1989 that angler fishery on the coho brought approximately $10 million into the coastal economy. That was just the ocean salmon fishery. And I suspect those numbers would be quite a bit higher today if we could return to those kind of fishing days. In the late 1970s, when we were sort of at the peak of the commercial fishery, coho landings brought about $7 million into the state, into the coastal economy. So it's hard to say exactly what that coho fishery meant, ocean coho fishery meant for the coastal economy, but according to the economists, it was at least $17 million. You take that, put it in context of what we're talking about, which is closing down, as I understand it, 5 or 6 hatcheries, and you carry that through the Chinook fishery, the steelhead fishery, and the trout fishery, and we begin to understand that the economic impacts of these hatchery-reared fish, as they reverberate through the economy, are really substantial. So I guess I would reflect Dave Peters' comments. I don't think anybody likes to come here and ask me to charge more for their fishing license. I know I don't. But as my dear old dad told me when I was 19, I really didn't believe him then, but, you know, money talks and you know what walks. And if you're not willing to pay your dues, they're going to close hatcheries and fishing opportunities are going to decline substantially. I took my wife to the movies the other day, and we went to the matinee, so we had to put up with all the kids. We're old and grumpy now. We spent $28 for 2 hours to see what I thought was a bad movie. My wife thought it was a wonderful movie. So what are you going to say? My wife will tell you that I spend more than 2 hours fishing every year, and so I would reflect that it's a bargain even at these increased rates. The other thing that I'd point out is that ODF&W is, at least for the state of Oregon, one of the point organizations in dealing with the coho and steelhead listings in the Endangered Species Act. Those reverberate not only through the fishery but into the economic spheres. They affect land use decisions. They affect some businesses because of restrictions. They have the potential to raise all kinds of cane with the farming industry. And to the credit of a number of organizations, including ODF&W, our wild fish populations returning to the Oregon coast have increased from 14,000 in 1997 to their estimate just came out a few days ago, is 279,333 fish for this year. So, you know, when you start talking close to 300,000 fish, as I understand it, the historic estimate was before the arrival of European civilization. We're talking about 1.5 million native Oregon coastal coho. So if we can hold those kind of numbers on the native fish, I think we're beginning to move toward the point where we can at least move coho off the endangered species listing, or threatened species listing, not endangered. Steelhead numbers are not nearly as promising, so we still have some work to do there, but at least coho we have good news. So I guess in summary, I would support that. As far as the people in our area go, we discussed this at our last meeting. We had about 40 members there. Actually, I missed our last meeting. I forgot about it. It was a December meeting. The fee increase, and everybody was in support of that. I attended the Newport meeting sponsored by ODF&W. I guess there were probably 100, 150 people there. One person spoke against the fee increase, and they were raising the same issue Representative Nelson was raising. Well, aren't you pricing a lot of people out of the market? And I guess in the big picture, you know, you worry about money in and money out, but I think fishing opportunities ought to be a little more broadly based. We ought to not only worry about money in and money out, but are there people out there that we're keeping out of from enjoying this opportunity And is there something we can do to be more inclusive in our fishery? Thank you, and I appreciate the time, Mr.
Chairman. Thank you, Ron. I appreciate it. Mr. Bird.
Yes, I'm Ron Bird with Nestucca Valley Sporting Goods, also president of Nestucca Anglers. A couple areas I just want to touch bases. I think the guys have done a great job of hitting all my thoughts. I do support this bill. As a retailer, selling licenses and seeing the fishermen in Tillamook County, we're right in the middle of it, and so I get to see the guys just before they hit the river and come back with fish. As a whole, everybody's supporting this bill. We have a lot of emotions and a lot of ownership in our county with our hatcheries. With our Nestucca Anglers, we work with Cedar Creek Hatchery very closely. We raise, the volunteers raise 100,000 false Chinook up three rivers at Rhodes Pond. And we also are running a broodstock program with steelhead in this program. In the STEP program, which is 4 years ago, we stepped up and started this program. And I didn't really know how it was going to work. What kind of commitment we had from the volunteers. Within less than a year, we had 200 members. At any moment, the hatchery can call these volunteers. When we have flood events, just like last week, we yesterday just got done cleaning up the hatchery with all the mud and whatnot. Quite a commitment from the public on this issue. And it pulls the government, the agency, and the people together, and everybody starts working together, and I think that's a great point to see. One of the things that Representative Nelson brought up just a few minutes ago was the $3 million that is in this bill for salary increases. My thoughts on this is I want the full increase as far as this bill lays out. If the governor has froze the state employees' salaries and we have an extra $3 million, that $3 million should go straight to the hatcheries on the deferred maintenance. The one thing that I know is my wounds are still healing on is we basically have been dealing with this hatchery closures for a year now. Political hostage, and if you want to call it that, and the one thing that was crammed down our throats was the deferred maintenance of these old hatcheries. These hatchery managers are putting these things together with Band-Aids. We need that deferred maintenance. So if there is any extra money, I think you're hearing from the public today that we want this increase, and let's use the increase to get these things upgraded and support ODFW.
Thank you, Ron. Good thought. Karen and Kelly, welcome. State your names, please.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name's Karen Smith. I'm from Bend, Oregon. I'm a registered nurse. One of my greatest interests is hunting. I'm a former state director of Oregon Hunters Association and also a former national director of Mule Deer Foundation. I've taught big game hunting for ODF&W's Oregon Outdoor Women. And I'm here to support ODF&W's funding request for House Bill 2260. This bill will only maintain the current programs that ODF&W has. I feel it would be very harmful to Oregon's wildlife and those of us interested in it. If programs have to be cut again, we need to keep the limited number of field staff and game officers, as well as the wildlife programs that are essential for wildlife and hunting in the future. ODF&W's funding comes from my money, from my license and tag fees, and not from general funds. I think we are lucky in Oregon that we get so much for so little. I am willing to increase my fees to pay for all that we get. One of the things I haven't heard too much of is that about the future of hunting, and I've been hunting since I was 13, and I was a single parent with a son. And I brought him up hunting, and I'd like to see that continue with my grandchildren. Not that I have any yet, but I hope to have some, and I'd like to see that continue. And this agency does a good job in maintaining the wildlife and the area out there, and I'd like to see that continue.
Well, Karen, I have to tell you that my wife was also a single mother who brought her son up to be a hunter and a fisherman also, and I can identify very much with what you're saying.
Me too, please.
Kelly, your thoughts. Welcome. State your name, please.
Chair Croft and committee members, my name's Kelly Smith. I live in Bend, Oregon. I'm here mostly as a someone who's interested in hunting and to a lesser extent fishing. I know more about the hunting side. I'm a former president and chairman of the board of the Oregon Hunters Association. I'm a former chairman of the board of the National Mule Deer Foundation. I served 8 years on the ODFMW's Access and Habitat Board, the first 8 years of that board's existence, actually. And especially in that latter position, that gave me a pretty good insight into a lot of the various game programs and the landowner assistance programs that actually would be cut if this bill doesn't pass. I'm here clearly to support the bill. I haven't heard a whole lot of people opposing it yet, and I don't think you're going to. I appreciated Senator Dukes' input, as well as at least two other members of the External Audit Committee or Budget Committee, and those people have a lot of inside information on the finances of the department and whether there's any cutting that could be done, whether there's any fat there. I think there is not. The department, in my view, is underfunded, and in fact, that's primarily a result of you and your colleagues and your predecessors hacking away at that budget every chance you get. And I think it's been uncalled for in the past. We've lost a lot of good people. This is a bill that affects primarily, or the funds come primarily from the users, not from the general fund. And if there's any people out there that deserve to be heard, I think it's the users, that's where the money's coming from. I wanted to comment briefly too on the issue of fees affecting people of limited income, especially the older people. For a number of years, the department has had a program where there's a pioneer license for people who are over 65 who've lived in the state for 50 years. That license is free. And there's also a senior program. If you're 70 years old and have only lived in the state for 5 years, you're eligible for that, and the price is half price. There are various disabled categories that have free licenses and tags. So there are a number of categories of folks that would be normally affected, that normally are on fixed incomes, that are already anticipated by the department. And I think if other folks are affected and it's a major concern that the pricing is getting too high on the fees, the answer is to provide funding for the department from the general fund. Right now, you know, almost all the funding comes from licenses and tags and some federal monies. And I think it's unfortunate that that's where it comes from, because the department benefits almost all Oregonians. And the demands on the department are greater and greater every year. We have endangered species and threatened species and non-game funding that has to be allocated where we didn't used to have that. And so I think that that this is a very simple decision for this committee. You're hearing support from everywhere. And I urge you to support it as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Kelly. Do appreciate that. Thank you all very much. Chair would like to call Terry Mulkey, Dick Helberg, and Ron Yoakum. If you would all come forward, please.
What happened to Tim and Shannon Morris?
They decided not to.
Oh.
Welcome, gentlemen. And if you would, for the record, state your name, please.
I'm Dick Helberg. I'm from Warrenton, Oregon. I'm
50 years,
a city commissioner from Warrenton. I'm also chairman of the R&E board for ODFW at the present time. And I'm here to speak on my own behalf, not for anybody that I happen to be an officer for. I do support this bill. I find it curious, though, that a lot of this bill is necessary because reading Commissioner Lindsey Ball's testimony that displacing general fund money that is anticipated to be lost in the next biennium. And the people here are obviously very passionate about this interest in the hunting and fishing, which I share with them. But I kind of wonder how many of them were just as passionate when they thought about cutting off the funds to the rest of the state when they defeated Measure 28. It just, to me, there's a little conflict here. But I don't want to see the ODFW's programs, especially the hatchery programs, go down for a lack of money. I think the impact to especially the North Coast from the hatcheries that were being proposed to close would be devastating and would be totally unjustified. So from that point of view, I would say I would want to support it. And also, I would like to see added to this bill, and I understand there's something else to it, but there were a number of meetings during the clam season last year with over the razor clams, and people want to have a license for at least for the razor clams, and I'm speaking for those that I know about in Clatsop County. And one of the reasons for it is that there were huge amounts of people that came down. There was a huge wastage in the resource. We have Washington also has the same resource across the river, and the people would come down across from there, and they were able to dig free. When we go across the river, we have to pay $7 for every 3 days. So I think there needs to be a little reciprocity there to where the residents of the state of Oregon get a fairly good break on the fee, and those from out of state need to pay at the same proportion that we have to pay when we go across the river for their seasons. I certainly would hate to see the department start regulating it like they do over there, but I think the license is germane to this discussion. So, also, a number of people had mentioned the state police and enforcement, and I would submit under the present budget and the cuts in the state police that even with adding 40, as the governor may be suggesting, that the state police have been eviscerated. They are eviscerated, and their effect will be negligible in the state of Oregon. And I would hopefully, outside this committee, some of you could affect that matter also, that 109 troopers being cut is just an unconscionable violation of the state's responsibility. So, thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Dick. And those are timely comments. The Speaker of the House announced a restoration package today of unused funds that we've found. It's about $15.5 million. It restores only about 40 troopers out of the 129 that turned in their gear on Thursday of last week. Some of us feel very passionately about that also, and I'm actually having legislation drafted to pull money from someplace else that I think is a much lower priority. We've spent $13 million in trainings for those 129 road troopers alone. That's not just the forensics labs.
Right.
And I don't want to get off base here, but that's $13 million down the drain if we let all of those people go. And that's really not good business. It's very, very poor policy, and it sets Oregon State Police up in a difficult position to recruit replacements for those individuals, including game enforcement officers in the future. And that's why we have to fix this now. Very timely comment.
I'm glad to hear your philosophy on it. Thank you.
You bet. Welcome, sir. Your name?
And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Ron Yoakum. I'm here on behalf of the Douglas County Board of Commissioners. They've asked I appear today and testify in support of this bill. Douglas County participated in the External Budget Review Committee, looked over these minutes, looked over the notes of all that, and listened to the hearings. Two things that came out to the Douglas County Commissioners that they thought was worth repeating. First of all is the closure of the Rock Creek hatchery. Rock Creek is extremely important to Douglas County. It's extremely important to not only the recovery of the coho, but also our Chinook steelhead and our cutthroat trout. So one of the things they wanted to pass on to you is that that's an issue they would like to see retained, like to see the hatchery retained and stay with this bill. The second issue that was extremely important to them was the possible cutting of assistant district biologists in the Umpqua Basin area. The assistant district biologist is instrumental in all the fish recovery programs, but also provides a foundation on which we can operate on resolving the Diamond Lake issues and resolving the whole fisheries issues up and down the coast. Coast, particularly Winchester Bay. We extend from Winchester Bay to Diamond Lake, and we have fisheries issues all up and down there that we would like to have the support of those assistant district biologists. Having said that, if you have any questions, I'll answer them. Otherwise, I'll be short and out of here. But we urge passage.
We're going to have to keep rolling unless you can make it real quick, Representative.
Well, Mr. Chair, I feel compelled to speak to this issue because we have so many listening in, and you know, to me, the truth will set you free. And I just want to just reiterate what the good committee administrator has pointed out, so everyone fully understands the law. And you know, I fish, so you know, I want everybody to understand that I'm a steelheader. But the pioneering angling license for people 65 and over requires them to have lived in this state for 50 years. You know, my philosophy is we can do better than that. Secondly, resident senior citizens get a discount and a half at the age of 70 only if they've lived here for 5 years. And furthermore, we only give veterans, you know, any consideration whatsoever if they have filed, you know, with the commission with written proof on their last official certification and show, you know, that they were a war veteran and at least 25% disabled. I'm just saying, I think this is wrong. We're talking about a beautiful state and one in which everybody should have the opportunity to enjoy it, and I believe we're more caring people than this. This is a something that these senior citizens, these veterans, these disabled people have longed to do their entire lives. They finally can do it, and having been concerned about sending a kicker back where a senior citizen told me that $7 made the difference in their utility bill last year, year before, I mean, I've just got to say, I hope there'll be some caring and compassion of this great group of men and women. And also, Mr. Chair, I'd just like to say that everybody can send money to DF&W all the time you want to. We don't have to make it in a law. We don't have to increase it. You don't have to just send $5. Send them $500. Nobody's restricting that, and we don't have to have it in this form. You could have a trust. Develop your trust. You know, and then you can determine how this money is spent. You don't have to give it to, you know, a division, and you don't have to be subject to continuous increases. Now, just for what it's worth, I owed that to you.
Thank you, Representative. Appreciate your thoughts. Thank you, gentlemen. The chair would like to call Tom Davis. Tom, are you here? And Terry Mulkey, did you come in the room yet? No? Okay. Tom, and the chair would also like to call Bill Sanderson. Bill, are you here? Joe Culver? Culver? Jerry Ray? Jerry, why don't you come forward also? Bob Rees? Bob, why don't you come forward? Why don't the three of you go ahead and testify for the moment? Tom, welcome, and share your thoughts with us and state your name, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Tom Davis. I'm chairman of the Alsea Watershed Council, also chairman of the Alsea Valley Alliance. But today I'm here on my own. I've a long time said that the ODF&W fees were a bargain. Even with the increases, they're a bargain. I would challenge the committee or anyone in this room to show me an agency that gets more for the dollar than the ODF&W does, especially when it comes to the economy of the rural communities that is returned, the money that's returned back to these communities, and it stays in these communities. That is a tremendous amount of money. I don't think Oregon State Studies even put a dent in the amount of money that actually showed up in those communities. I think that a few things could be added to this bill. Mr. Steele mentioned the second rod fee. That would be strictly a voluntary thing. $30, $50 would amount to a lot of money over the state. Would be optional for residents or non-residents. I fish many states besides Oregon. Some states offer conservation stamps, $10 for every boat that enters your waters. You have to have that, an annual stamp. You pay that. That money is directed to propagation, be it hatcheries, step programs, whatever. The Watershed Council that I mentioned that I was the chairman of is involved with OWEB. $50 million every biennium goes to the OWEB programs. A lot of that money, in my estimation, is wasted and should be redirected to propagation, whether it's hatcheries or step or whatever. These streams have hundreds of miles of habitat, excellent habitat, that is being unused. And now we have the opportunity to do something about it. That's one of my recommendations, is to defer some of the money from OWEB to propagation, even though it is a different program altogether. Mr. Steele also mentioned the drift boat license. Well, I would go further. I think any craft that's angled from should be licensed. That wouldn't cause Bobby to take his rubber raft down the rapids, and he wouldn't have to have a license on that, but or inner tubes or whatever. But if it's angled from in the state of Oregon, there should be no free ride.
Okay. Very good. Anything else to add?
Do you have any questions?
I think we're good for the moment. Thanks, Tom.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Appreciate it. Appreciate all the good work you did as part of the Alsea Valley Alliance there. Jerry, welcome.
Thank you.
Now, you have extensive testimony. Can you summarize this for us?
It's short. It looks long, but I have poor eye vision. I got to have big letters.
All right.
Chairman Croft and members of the committee, my name is Jerry Ray. I live at 800 Northwest Meadowview, Corvallis, Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to testify here on Bill number 2260, the 2003-05 budget for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I am Secretary of the Mary Speak Hound Club, Vice President of the National Foundation for Wildlife, and I serve on the Board of Directors for both Oregon Sporting Dog Association and Mid-Valley Chapter of the Oregon Hunters Association. I was an active participant helping develop the proposed budget you have before you. I support whatever fee increase necessary to cover the projected budget shortfall of the Department of Fish and Wildlife and maintain current services. However, for the record, the Mary Speak Hound Club asks that E.E. Wilson Wildlife Area be removed from the Department of Fish and Wildlife cut list. This item is found on page 16 of the detailed budget proposal, April 2002, and that page is provided for you. This is the only wildlife area considered to be cut. Expense to the department for one full-time person, who is the biologist, manager, and current minimum maintenance of the wildlife area is $96,492 per year. All of this expense revenue comes from hunting and fishing licenses and no general funds. Because of excellent management skills of the only full-time employee, volunteer hours, hunter, fisherman, and outdoor enthusiasts harmoniously use the area 12 months a year. Considering the volume of user activity, this is the best managed wildlife area for dollars invested under control of ODF&W. With the help of the National Foundation for Wildlife, we have identified over 30 distinctly different user groups and have identified them as on a yearly basis using E.E. Wilson. A few of these groups are Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, elementary, middle school, and high school students from a host of schools in the Willamette Valley. They all benefit from use of E.E. Wilson, a managed wildlife area. Willamette University, Oregon State University, Western University, University of Oregon, Lynn Benton Community College, and other institutions of higher learning have all conducted research on the wildlife area. Just last week, Mary's Peak Hound Club was proud to host
for the 13th year our annual rabbit hunt for disabled hunters. We had 9 disabled hunters, along with their friends and family members, enjoy an excellent day outdoors in Oregon. The 1,683-acre E.E. Wilson Wildlife Area is the only area in Oregon totally accessible to Oregon wheelchair citizens. Do 9 disabled people matter? You bet. Don't deprive over 50,000 recreational users at E.E. Wilson their opportunity to be outdoors in Oregon. At the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife headquarters in downtown Portland, administration, staff, and other personnel in that agency enjoy the necessity of electricity, running water, and indoor privies. My point? The necessity that E.E. Wilson continues as a managed wildlife area by the ODF&W is very important to thousands of Oregonians. Some things have to be financed regardless of cost. My testimony packet contains pictures and a copy of the testimony I presented to the Fish and Game Commission earlier in 2002. I hope this will benefit in your consideration of this budget matter. In conclusion, I have 2 points. 1, Mary's Peak Hound Club support any tag and license fee increase necessary to offset the 2003 through 5 budget shortfall in the ODF&W agency. 2, Mary's Peak Hound Club requests that E.E. Wilson Wildlife Area be preserved at all costs and therefore removed from any list of possible cuts by the Department of Fish and Wildlife. I thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. I appreciate that. And the chair would be happy to work with the vice chair from Corvallis on that issue, as I have certain affinity for the E.E. Wilson area myself.
Thank you.
And Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I likewise would, as Mr. Vaughn is one of my constituents. And
Dale Vaughn. Oh, yes.
Certainly appreciate the Vaughn Loggin in my territory.
Doesn't he picture well?
He is. He makes a great picture.
Very good. Well, thank you. Bob, welcome. For the record, state your name.
Thanks for having me. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bob Reese. I'm president of the Tillamook Guides Association in Tillamook, Oregon. Our members are numbered about 35, which is relatively small for an association. But we derive our incomes from sport fishing and collectively conduct probably over 5,000 angler trips annually. As you can see and have heard, the importance of hatchery fish to our industry is imperative. We have grown our businesses on the coho, steelhead, spring chinook, and fall chinook that the Trask, Cedar Creek, and Whiskey Creek hatcheries have produced for Oregon anglers. We are working on our habitat issues and improving our hatchery brood stock, but hatchery fish provide opportunities. These opportunities not only provide a product for sport and commercial fishers and local small business owners, but also for the state of Oregon. More license and tag revenues have already salvaged some of ODF&W's programs, and Oregon anglers are willing to contribute more. If there ever was a case for taxation with representation, it would be House Bill 2260. And we just ask that you please support what Oregon anglers do. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Bob. Appreciate it. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
Chair would like to call Lloyd, is it Ogben? I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Lloyd, if you're here, make your way here, please. Janie Hutz and Jack Mattis, am I saying that? Please come forward. And also, the chair would like to call, is it Karsten J. Henson? I hope I'm saying that correctly. I don't always read well. Okay. I'm just trying to get through all of the folks who have traveled the furthest to be here today. Okay, Jane.
Mr. Chairman, honorable members of the committee, my name is Jane Hunts. I live near Trail, Oregon, a rural part of Jackson County, represented by the Honorable George Gilman. I'm here today in not only my capacity as a private citizen, passionately interested in wildlife in this state, but also wearing two official hats. I'm on the legislative committee of the Foundation for North American Wild Sheep, an international organization which serves to promote habitat and healthy herds of wild sheep, the bighorn sheep, in Canada, the United States, and Mexico. I'm speaking officially on their behalf with direct authorization from their executive director in Cody, Wyoming. I'm also here officially in my capacity as president of the Oregon chapter of the Foundation for North American Wild Sheep, a new group only 4 years old, but a group that is already contributing over $50,000 a year into wildlife enhancement projects here in the state of Oregon. I'm here to encourage you in those capacities to support House Bill 2260. The major concern that I have is the lack of wildlife biologists. The staff is going to be cut in this budget. We're going to lose 21 full-time employees if we don't impose this new increase. The reality is that we need those biologists on the ground. Twice in my capacity with the Foundation for North American Wild Sheep, I've gone to Mexico, meeting with the citizen leaders of the Ejidos, the land-grant communities that were divided up after the revolution in Mexico. Although some of those leaders have gone on and have become educated, and there are physicians and attorneys represented in the leadership for those communities, it's also truly also the fifth grade education, what we used to call the peon, or the peasant class, who still serves in those leadership capacities. And it's our role through the Foundation to try to convince them that they need to institute scientific management of their wildlife, that through good data and good science that they can make rational decisions which will help them to enhance the health of their bighorn sheep herds and a long-term viability of hunting there. How strange, then, that here in my own state, I have to drive to Salem and encourage you to give us the biologists to give us that data here in this state. Because that's what we're talking about. Your commissioners and you as legislators make your decisions in what you hope is on good science, well-researched. But if you take away those on-the-ground biologists, you're going to be shooting in the dark. When those tags are established and the numbers are going to be given every year, if you don't have the biology behind it, you could be overhunting or underhunting. Both of those situations are devastating to the animals. You need the biologists on the ground for those. You also need the biologists on the ground for response to disease situations. I've had the great fortune to go a number of times into Hell's Canyon with biologists working for Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife as well as the Idaho and Washington departments. I had the tragic situation one time of having to go with the biologist to try to pick up two dead lambs. We'd seen them the day before, and we could tell that they were ailing. We found them with an hour or two of their death, and I worked with those biologists, helped them find the animals, and saw them rush them to the state labs to try to determine what the cause were so that we can work to avert those deaths in the future. Those are the biologists that you're potentially taking away. I've walked through the hills with those biologists picking up fresh sheep pellets so they could take them to the lab and do the studies that you need to know what kind of habitat is going on in the Hell's Canyon area. Without that, you don't know what kind of decisions need to be made. So I can't urge you strongly enough that you need to pass this funding in order to maintain the support for those biologists. And you need to make sure that as you do this in a way so that part of the fees that come in through the hunting tags are separate from those increases that come in from the fishing tags, so that those funds are dedicated and we can maintain those positions. There's been a lot of discussion today about the affordability of these tags, and I think we've probably pretty much covered it. But I want to remind you that when it comes to the hunting side, that there are basically two types of hunters. There's a trophy hunter and the subsistence hunter. With the trophy hunter, I think you can all understand that these small increases are nothing to them. They spend hundreds, thousands. Sometimes I've actually seen hunters spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on trophy hunts. A $10 fee for them is negligible. What we're concerned about, of course, is the subsistence hunter. But when you realize when you're not talking fishing, but when you're talking about the subsistence hunting, generally you're talking about people who are going after elk or deer, the larger animals which provide a substantial quantity of food for the family. If you take that small fee and you figure out what it is cost per pound, the people who are subsistence hunters are still being subsidized by other hunters to a great extent in the grocery bills. They're paying pennies per pound for putting meals in their families' tables. We're not asking this to come into an amount that becomes unaffordable for our subsistence hunters. So again, I don't want to be redundant with what others have said, but I just can't tell you enough how important it is to the animals of this state and hunting for the future that you raise these fees now in order to maintain the biologists that we have. We're already short. This last year, my foundation raised the money to hire one of the part-time positions, the summer position, in order to complete a three-year scientific study because the funding ran out and there wasn't enough money with the pay freezes. They couldn't hire a person to do the monitoring of the final year of a study. My group stepped forward. But we can only raise about $50,000 a year. We can't do this on our own. We need the support of the general hunting dollars in order to maintain our animal health. Thank you.
Thanks, Jane. Jack, welcome. For the record, state your name, please.
Yes, I'm Jack Matisse. I'm not a citizen of your state. I'm an out-of-stater. I've spent the last 40 or 45 years buying non-resident tags and licenses for myself and my family. I hunt and fish all around the United States, and by far the best deal going is particularly now the fishing in the state of Oregon. I thought you might just like to hear from someone who's not in the state, who brings all that outside the state money, the best kind for Oregonians. And I would certainly, along with a lot of my friends and associates, encourage these adjustments in the prices of the tags.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I just want to ask Jack if he has studded tires.
No, I don't. I used to, but I don't. It doesn't freeze anymore.
Trying to ease the tension here.
All right.
Okay, thank you both very much. All right, we're going to go back to the top of the list here. And chair would like to call is Trey Karskadden and Liz Hamilton here. Are you both here? Yeah. I did. Joe, come forward. Welcome to you both. And Trey, why don't you start, and then we'll go to Joe.
I'll keep the comments brief to 2.5 minutes, Chair Croft and members of the committee. I've come here today as a board member and representative of the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association.
And his name is what?
This is Trey, and say your last
name. Oh, I'm sorry, Karskadden. Trey Karskadden, Tualatin, Oregon.
Thank you.
NSIA, which is the acronym for that, represents over 300 sport fishing-related businesses around the Northwest, from small, one-person guide operations to call their boat their office, to large retailers like G.I. Joe's, Fisherman's Marine Supply, and Fred Meyer. Our constituent businesses include large Oregon enterprises like Lure Jensen, the largest employer in Hood County, Alumwald and North River Boats, both large employers in their respective areas, along with dozens of tackle dealers, every major tackle distributor, rod and reel manufacturers, and many, many more. We represent the Northwest sport fishing industry, big and small. In our ranks are fierce competitors, regional differences, seasoned business people, newcomers, and individuals from all walks of Oregon life. As diverse as we are at a glance, we have one very compelling thing in common: the success of Northwest sport fishing. We know that when Northwest sport fishing succeeds, their industry wins. We've seen it firsthand these past few years as salmon return numbers have soared thanks to the work of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Our organization and a great many others contributed to this, and we knew that when given the chance, we could put the results where our mouth was. The Columbia River spring chinook fishery is one of many we can point to that just a few years ago was closed and out of business. With much cooperative and collective work, a fishery that 4 years ago and more than 20 years prior to that had been closed turned into 6 or 7 weeks that has produced 175,000 angler trips and $20 million of direct economic benefit to lower Columbia communities. These are meaningful benefits that are realized by the businesses we represent, but extend well beyond the sport fishing community. People are drawn from all over the country to enjoy what we've created together. Tackle and boat dealers as far north as Bellingham and south to Medford reap the benefits, as do manufacturers, guides, hotels, restaurants, gas stations, and all the Oregon communities close to these fisheries who share in the success we've created through our government and industry partners. None of this would be possible, however, without a fully functioning and fully funded ODFW. Fully, 20% of the state's population fish, but all Oregonians deserve a second paycheck. That is, when Fish and Wildlife wins, the state wins. It is why people locate here. It's part of what makes Oregon the proud state that it is. It's part of our identity, both economically and the character of who we are. Without the passage of House Bill 2260, hatcheries will be closed, enforcement will be lost, and as you've heard, biologists will be cut. We need all of these to succeed. Cuts in any of these areas will be an enormous setback that will profoundly affect our industry and dozens of Oregon communities. Our businesses depend on the success of the ODFW. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife creates the opportunity. We translate that opportunity into participation and economic benefit, which we have and are doing right now. These past couple of years, sport fishing has been one of the few bright spots in the Oregon economy. ODFW's budget represents less than one-half of 1% of the general fund, yet we generate $1.3 billion statewide as an industry. When we've asked for and received fee increases in the past, we've effectively sold it to our customers, because we're the ones charged to do that, the sport fishing public, and we've helped to create other funding sources for the department we need to grow our businesses. We ask that you support House Bill 2260. It is an answer we will sell to our customers on the state's behalf. It is an answer we collectively support as an industry, and in these careful and most difficult of times, it is an answer that will pay the state back and provide a second paycheck to other Oregonians desperately looking for answers to resolve the crisis we're in today. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Trey. Good thoughts. Liz, do you have something else to add?
Thank you. Briefly, appreciate the opportunity to comment. For the record, my name's Liz Hamilton. I have the good fortune of serving as Executive Director of Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association. I brought along today packets of letters from other businesses who are in Japan, some of them right now developing Pacific Rim trade. Some are at Sportsman Show setting up their booth today in Portland. So they sent along their thoughts, and we appreciate your consideration of their viewpoints as well.
And that's what's in this packet here?
Yes, sir.
Is this your picture?
Yes, it is.
I thought so.
We use that to illustrate how a salmon swimming through your community available for sport fishing is worth its weight in gold. People spend about $100 a day when they go fishing, and in Oregon it's hot fishing when 4 days gets one fish. That's how silly we all are. Four of us will go fishing, we'll get one fish, and we each spent about $100 that day fishing. So it does give money back into the communities.
Thank
what
you
about us, Mr. Chair, who go months and catch none?
Well, you need to watch more fishing programs, Representative. Joe, welcome.
Thank you. Chair Krepp, members of the committee, my name is Joe Joe Culver. I'm the state organizer of the Oregon Trappers Association. I represent a group of people who probably pay as much or more in fees as anyone else in the state. They're dyed-in-the-wool sportsmen. They trap, they hunt, and they fish, and they do it with a vengeance. They won't like having to pay higher fees, but they also understand the importance of good wildlife management, and they are willing to pay for it. The fat has already been cut from Fish and Wildlife, and also some of the meat. Good employees have gone elsewhere for work rather than face the uncertainty of continued employment with ODFW. The position of fur bearer biologist has been vacant for a year. This is a problem for us because we no longer have a contact person in charge of fur bearer management. Our relationship with ODFW has always been somewhere between satisfactory and good, and this dates back over 30 years, incidentally. About a year ago, anticipating some changes in the trapping regulations, I contacted several district offices for information. Not only did biologists from every district return my calls and thoroughly discuss my proposals, but there were follow-up calls from supervisors making sure I was satisfied with what was discussed. a conversation at a commission hearing with a fish biologist about beaver habitat, got a phone call for more information, and eventually a tour of two watersheds. These two examples illustrate a major change in the attitude of ODF and W employees. It is an agency that is far more user-friendly and answerable to the public than it has ever been in the past, and I rate our relationship very good now. I recommend passage of House Bill 2260.
Thank you, Joe. Thank the three of you very much. I appreciate it. Chair would like to call Tom, is it Vanderplatt, and Norm Ritchie? You guys, you've already talked. And okay, so we're not going to worry about them. Russ Patterson. Russ, come forward. And Russ, do you have anyone else from your group with you that signed up to testify? Okay, Russ, why don't you come forward? And the chair would also like to call Daniel Dieter. Daniel, are you here? Okay, Joseph Schwab. Joseph, are you here either? John Crawfer, something of. I'm sorry if I massacred your name. Please forgive me. Okay, why don't you go ahead, Russ? Thank you. Welcome.
Representative Croft, thank you. My name is Russ Patterson. I'm on the board of directors of Tillamook Anglers, also the manager of Whiskey Creek All Volunteer Hatchery, and past chair of the STEP Advisory Committee and Tillamook Bay Watershed Council, past co-chair. My position has been covered a lot. I've got a few points that I'd like to cover. If these hatcheries close, they support STEP operations like ours, and STEP, they department gets their money, a lot of it from Wattleboro funds, which is Sport Fish Restoration funds, and they get approximately four workers for the price of one, because it costs them 25%. For that money that they get for STEP, they leverage millions of dollars in volunteer labor and dollars and effort put forth toward the department project. The closure of these hatcheries would be devastating to the salmon trout enhancement program, and thereby losing a lot of money and leverage and goodwill from the STEP organizations. And these hatcheries not only produce salmon, steelhead, but they produce trout. And if these hatcheries in our area close, there isn't going to be anything for them to fish for, then therefore no need for licenses and dollars. So we really need to keep them open. Also, we've already lost many OSP officers, and without this increase, we would lose two more. And we need enforcement. People poach. I mean, and they do it a lot. And we need enforcement. There's also like 27 wildlife positions that would go down the drain without this. And a point that was made, and I'd like to reiterate, is that the crab and shellfish license would offset the dollars spent by ODFW in study and enforcement. So we need to keep catchable, keepable fish so that we have people to buy licenses and tags. I support it, and I beg you to don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Let's pass this and take care of our seniors and our veterans and everything at that time. After that.
Thank you, Russ. I appreciate your comments.
Thank you
very much. Chair would like to call next. Did Daniel Dieter, Joseph Schwab, or John Crawfer show up? Nobody did? Okay. Let's go to Brenda Coker. Chuck and Judy, is it Wieseman? They had to leave. Okay. And you're Brenda?
I am.
Welcome. And how about Dennis Ritchie? Dennis, why don't you come forward? And who else? Do you have anyone else with you, Dennis? Okay, very good. Welcome, Brenda. For the record, state your name, please.
Thank you. And first, I want to thank you and all the committee members for hearing us.
My name is Brenda Coker. I'm an ODFW volunteer host, and many of you may not know what the host program is or the entire volunteer program. But if this bill is not passed, we will lose our volunteer coordinators. I'm sure you've heard the many hatcheries and the wildlife areas and all the volunteer hours that have gone in. Just last year, well, 2001, we had 253 hosts that contributed 72,500 hours, volunteer hours. And that's just for the host program. Then those are the ones that are actually on site. There are 60 sites throughout Oregon, approximately. And of course, many if those hatcheries close, that'll reduce it by several. The volunteer coordinators are the ones that match the volunteers. I'm a volunteer host. I have also been privileged to serve as acting volunteer coordinator for 6 months while they were trying to fill the vacancies. And I think that if you look at the numbers, you'll see just how well ODFNW is managing wildlife and hatcheries by using all these hosts. There are local hosts and there are host sites where we have hosts that live on site. It's security. It's regular duties that they perform, either feeding fish or feeding elk or taking tours or counting elk. Or it's limitless what they can do. And each of these hosts bring with them some special gift. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard it over and over. I've fished and I've hunted in Oregon my entire life, and I want to give back. If you don't help them keep the volunteer coordinators, there won't be anyone to help them help us. So I brought some brochures, but I think it's best that I leave them with you and then not go into it. I don't have a lot more to say other than we also involve the local hosts. We have Eagle Scout projects, Boy Scout projects, OSU students. We have, if you haven't heard about it, it's the Western Pond Turtle Head Start Program. And for the past 8 years, we've been giving a head start to the Western Pond Turtles. I've got a high school that drives 40 miles to come and feed those turtles once a week. I mean, it's just amazing how much the public wants to give back to Oregon. So I'm hoping you can help us let all these people help Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda. I appreciate that.
Dennis, welcome for the record.
My name is Dennis Ritchie. I'm executive director of Oregon Anglers. I'm also a disabled angler myself. I've traveled up and down the Willamette Valley since I think it was late June when the possibility of this necessary raise in fees first came up, and I've talked to many groups and organizations about this, probably at least 1,500 anglers. I have heard some echoes of Representative Nelson's concern that the cost would be a hardship on a few people. However, when the choice was put to them that would you rather have a license fee increase or no fish to catch, the unanimous answer was could be expected. It's we'd rather have the fish to catch, and we could live with that increase. And that's less than 5% of the anglers that had that attitude. The rest resoundingly said, increase the fees, we need it. I would call your attention to the economic data in paragraph 4. That's perhaps something that you've not heard. And this is taken off the American Sportsman website, so the veracity of that, I can blame on them if it's not totally accurate. In 1997, which was an absolutely lousy year for fishing, over $67 million directly was contributed to the state of Oregon in taxes. when you look at the multiplier factor with gasoline, lodging, at $2.18 billion, it's mind-boggling. But this is hunting and fishing together. This is sportsmen in the state. This bill affects hunters and fishermen, and we urge your approval of this with a due pass as you move it along to the next committee. In summary, the anglers say, we want to catch fish. Unless the hatcheries are there, we're not going to catch fish. We're willing to pay for it. Please pass it on. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis, and appreciate your thoughts in preparing testimony for us. Before we call up anyone else, I want to let you know that we've secured the room till 4 o'clock. I'll rearrange my schedule. I really would like to hear from all of you. I made that commitment to you, and I want to make sure that's done. Members, I know that you may have, as I do, other appointments. If you need to go to those, feel free to do so. But I will, in good conscience, stay here until that 4 o'clock time frame, and I think we can get through just about everyone who has come to testify. So, in that case, the chair would like to call John and Billy Bowles. Are you here, John and Billy? Okay, how about Jesse Zalonis or Zalonis? Jesse, are you here? Okay. Bill Mashofsky and Wayne Giese have both left, it appears. Is it Sarah Zalonis? Sarah, are you here?
Sure, Tom.
Yes.
I have a comment. The last dozen names you called were guides, and I think they allowed Bob Reese to speak for us.
Okay.
Show their appreciation.
That is, state your name again.
Jerry Dove.
Jerry Dove. That was Jerry. For the record, that was Jerry Dove making that comment. Is it Jim Croft? Please, come forward, sir. And the chair would also... Is Bill Sanderson here? Bill, did you? Okay. How about Wayne Van Dyke? Wayne, are you here? Raymond Miller? Tom Burgess? Oh, Ray. Raymond, come forward, please. Tom Burgess? Okay, Tom, why don't you come forward also? Very good. Start, sir, please. For the record, state your name.
Thank you. My name is Jim Krotz. I appreciate the intensity with which the committee is listening to us. It's been really neat to see. I'm from Sweet Home. That's a long way from the North Coast rivers, especially when you try to get up there and get there in time for daybreak. Try that sometime. But I fish the rivers. I utilized the guide services. I had about $650 worth of guides fees that I paid out last year. Bought a boat. That means that a guy down in Medford welded that boat up for me. A guy in Springfield made the trailer for me. And what I'd like to say is just that we're touching a lot of people. We need these people working. I can pay more money, income tax or whatever, but I can't make up for 400 or 500 people that might go out of work. So I think we're fighting not only for the fish, but I think we're fighting unemployment as well. As an aside, I didn't realize that Jerry Ray was going to be here. I was also at E.E. Wilson last weekend with a friend who is a quadriplegic. It is an area of intense activity and access for him. He loves the outdoors, and it's one of the few venues that he has to do that. So we need that E.E. Wilson area as well. So I urge passage of this bill. Thank you.
Thanks, Jim. Appreciate it. Glad to have one of my constituents here, as a matter of fact. Sir, for the record, state your name.
Raymond Miller. I'm a member of a fishing club that's based here in Salem, the Mid-Willamette Valley Anglers. We have about 200 members, although we... at our last board meeting, all were in consensus that this bill needs to be passed. I'm not speaking for the entire membership. We didn't have time to present it to them. I can't add anything to the eloquent presentations that's already been made, other than the fact that a lot has been made about the extra costs for people that can't afford it. I think too much is being made about too little on that issue. I don't think I don't think you can buy a fishing lure, one fishing lure, for the price of increase that we're talking about here. And if somebody is actively pursuing the sport, I'm sure that the increase is not going to cause them to not buy a license. It's been said how much we get for how little, and that is so true. And it is important that we keep this a viable sport, and the only way we're going to do that is to keep these hatcheries open. And I support this passage of this bill.
Thank you, Raymond. Appreciate it. It's Tom?
Yes.
Welcome. For the record, state your name.
Hi, I'm Tom Burgess, Canby, Oregon. First off, I want to thank you for allowing us to be here. And I'm hoping that with everybody shaking their head that they're really showing an honest interest in what we're saying and that you believe in what we're saying. I'm very impressed with that. I'm not on any committees. I'm not all that kind of stuff. But I was born and raised in Astoria. I lived at Bonneville Dam when housing was there, so I'm very familiar with Tanner Creek Fish Hatchery. In high school, I worked at Carson Fish Hatchery as a volunteer. And I also did a project in high school where I raised salmon just because of the big interest in it. So I've always had an interest there. I've served 28 years in the Oregon National Guard. I retired from there. And now I'm a full-time fishing guide. So, of course, my interests are very strong in that area. I do want to just real shortly say that just in the Tillamook-Astoria area alone, the days that I spent down there, which are not near the days a lot of guys that have already left are there, 60 to 70 days I spend there, everybody I polled said they have no problem paying an increase in fees, all my clients I talked to. And also, I would say that I probably spend $5,000 to $6,000 just down there myself. That's not the rest of the state where I fish. And my clients probably roughly spend between $50,000 and $60,000, taxes, gas, our fees, and the whole thing involved. So I'm just a small fish in the big pond, but there's some money there. When I go to Alaska in July is my kind of time off, just for 6 days alone to fish, it costs me more than the entire sport pack in Oregon for a year. And that 6 days, which you usually stay a little longer, so then you've got to buy another one, allows me to catch one Chinook or two a season. And that's it. And I pay a lot more money for that. So those are examples. I also want to bring up, because I'm involved with that and have done that, is that ODF, through the Fish and Game and everything, have a free fishing day in Oregon in June, which is very highly supportive, and a lot of kids and mothers come to that. People can fish free that day, and they've came out, and we actually put a huge swimming pool up one day, and they brought fish for us to put into that swimming pool because the area we were fishing on in Willamette didn't support trout, and we didn't want to catch carp. We wanted to catch trout for the kids to give them a good experience, and they brought those trout to us, put them in that pond, set up the oxygen that was needed, and did everything for nothing. And that was a lot of time on a Friday before free fishing day. Very, very supportive. So, again, I just want to say that, you know, the money and everything there, that we strongly support it. Whenever we go to a launch site at a county, we as guides have to pay for a business license at that area. And we may only use it 3 or 4 times a year. We may use it 50 or 60. But we pay it. We don't argue with it. We pay the fee, and it's 10 times what we're asking for the increase here just to launch our boats there. And we don't even live in that county, but we pay it. And we accept that fact. And I think fishermen will accept the fact that they have to pay for the increase. It's minor compared to all the other states. We're low. So, again, thank you very much. We strongly support the guides 2260, and I also support the extra fee for the rod. I think if a person's willing to pay it, let them do it. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Tom. Quick question for you. Is the free fishing day for everybody?
Everybody. You can be from out of state and come down and fish. Everybody. And a lot of parks, organizations, we do ours at Champlain State Park. So there's not much watershed there for us to fish. And we get between 150 and 250 kids, and there are a lot of single mothers, that this is their only introduction to fishing come to that. Yes, it is. You can fish with a guide for free, but a lot of us volunteer our time to do the free fish. They give us rods, reels, and everything. We go to G.I. Joe's and Bi-Mart. They give us worms, power bait, everything, and they give us. We put gummy bears. We do this whole package thing for the kids. And, of course, it draws interest in fishing. That's what we're hoping for. But it's awesome to watch these kids with their single parents. It's the only opportunity they get to fish the whole year, a lot of them.
Very good.
It's great.
That's a great story. Thank you, gentlemen. Really appreciate it. Clyde Monroe, Clyde, are you here? I think I missed Clyde earlier. I may have called his name, but he lives more than 100 miles, and I tried to get to everyone. Okay, next, Rachel Burgess. Rachel, if you'd come forward. Jim Cathcart. Jim, are you here? Yep, I think I see him in the back. And Bruce Taylor. Bruce, are you here? Okay, why don't the three of you come forward? Welcome, Rachel. For the record, state your name.
My name is Rachel Burgess. I was born in Oregon and have lived in Oregon my whole life. I currently work full-time in the recreation travel field, dealing with Oregonians and out-of-state travelers and visitors every day. When talking to people, our beautiful parks, camping facilities, and recreation opportunities are always brought up. Visitors especially tell me daily how lucky we are to live here. And what amazes me most is almost every discussion leads to fishing in our rivers and bays. Our salmon and steelhead are always discussed. It always gives me great pride and joy to talk salmon and steelhead with them. To lose even a part of that would be terrible. People are always willing to pay for good services and valuable products, or is encamping a special site? And I know the same holds true for fishing. To increase fees for support, what we have is a given, but to lose what we have is unthinkable. Thank you.
Very good. Rachel, is that your dad or your husband back there?
My husband.
I'm sorry, man, but I mean, she looks really young, pal, okay?
Thank you.
Very good. Okay. Jim, welcome. Good to see you again, for the record.
Thank you, Chairman Krupp and members of the committee. My name is Jim Cathcart. I am a resident of Oregon. I live in Portland. I've taken the afternoon off from work to be here today. I've come down here at my own expense, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify on House Bill 2260. I'm an avid sport fisherman. I support a do-pass recommendation for House Bill 2260. The logic behind House Bill 2260 is as follows. Hatcheries for salmon and steelhead and the enforcement of fish and game laws and habitat programs and biologists are good for Oregon. 2, state revenues are in the tank. 3, as a result, essential state government services and programs have been cut. 4, as such, sportsmen recognize, accept, and understand why general funds for hatcheries, fish and game enforcement, and habitat programs would also be part of these cuts. 5, sportsmen know that for hatcheries, fish and game enforcement, and habitat programs to continue, they're going to have to pay more for the cost of these programs to license and tag fee increases. This is not increased taxation. This is increased realization. I fish at least once a week, at least a few hours per trip, mostly from the bank, both gear fishing and fly fishing. I make about 4 to 6 trips a year to the North Coast. I do like the opportunity to catch and keep a fish, but that's not the primary reason why I go fishing. I go fishing because I enjoy it. I fish. Under House Bill 2260, I would take $10 more for my annual fishing license and harvest tax. I'm looking forward to paying this increase and would be willing to pay more if necessary. I support House Bill 2260 not out of concern over the opportunity to catch and keep a steelhead, but concern over a broader issue that is at stake here, and that is the sustainability of our fisheries. I am an advocate for wild fish, and as such, I generally support Oregon's evolving wild fish policies. But for the same reason, it makes no sense to allocate our rivers to the maximum production of hatchery fish for economic reasons. It also makes no sense to environmentally allocate our rivers to wild fish stocks to the exclusion of hatchery stocks. Some rivers, yes. North Coast rivers, no. The dimension that weaves the environmental with the economics is the social dimension, people. And the North Coast rivers are an hour or two away from a lot of people. Therefore, the sustainability of the resource to be achieved, the ecological, social, and economic values from the resource need to be achieved. House Bill 2260 keeps this balance intact by providing the funds so Oregon can continue with the environmental, social, and economic management of our North Coast salmon and steelhead fisheries, as exemplified both by rootstock hatchery programs, which garnish a lot of community and volunteer and educational efforts, and the continued enforcement of fishing regulations that provides for the selective harvest of hatchery fish and the careful release of wild fish. Passage of House Bill 2260 is a clear statement by the legislature that a state fiscal crisis and unprecedented need for budget reduction is neither the time nor place to make irretrievable wild fish management policies. Those who advocate for the environmental at the expense of the social and economic would have you believe that House Bill 2260 is a tax and would exacerbate the state's budget woes. Please do not buy into this line of thinking. These positions simply take advantage of a bad situation to advance an environmental agenda. If successful, these tactics would actually disconnect people from their watersheds and hurt rural Oregon economies. The time and place for addressing wild and hatchery fish management is through continued scientific inquiry, thoughtful public discussion, and informed decision-making by agencies, commissions, and the legislature. Passage of House Bill 2260 buys us the time to develop this place. Given that the state of Oregon has a much more pressing and daunting education, health, and public safety budget matters to resolve, I urge you to allow us sports people to take one of your worries off your plate. Please allow us to pay more for essential fish and game programs through increased license fees with a due pass recommendation for House Bill 2260. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate that. Welcome, Bruce, for
the record.
Thank
you very much. Chair Krupp, members of the committee, my name is Bruce Taylor. I'm here today on behalf of Defenders of Wildlife to support House Bill 2260. License fee increases are not our preferred option for funding the Department of Fish and Wildlife's budget shortfall. The department's heavy dependence on revenues from the sale of hunting and fishing licenses is at the root of many of ODFW's continuing fiscal problems. The department clearly needs broader and more stable sources of funding to do the many jobs inherent in its mission statement. Kelly Smith alluded to that earlier today. But this year, there are no other good options. This package of license fee increases is essential to sustain some of the Department of Fish and Wildlife's core capacity to implement its programs. Should this measure fail, the likely cuts within the Wildlife Department wildlife program alone include some 18 field positions, most of them assistant district biologists working in every corner and every legislative district in the state. Although ODFW budget documents emphasize the impacts on the department's ability to address wildlife damage problems, many of these field staff also work with private landowners who want to improve wildlife habitat on their land. They conduct much of ODFW's basic inventory work, assist watershed councils, and work with other state agencies and local governments to minimize the impacts of development on wildlife and wildlife habitat. These staff cuts will come at a tremendous cost in loss of knowledge and experience at the level closest to the ground, where the impacts on fish and wildlife resources are the greatest. The damage to the department and its programs will be deep and long-lasting. Increasing license fees won't solve the Department of Fish and Wildlife's long-term funding problems, but as a short-term fix, it is clearly the best option available this year. Please join us in supporting House Bill 2260.
Thank you, Bruce. Appreciate the three of your testimony. Chair would like to call Gerald By, Mid-Willamette Valley Anglers. Do we want to... Gerald, are you here? Okay. How about Rod Brobeck? Rod, come forward if you would, please. Steve Schaefer's. Steve, are you here? How about, let's see, I've called Lloyd. Is it Ogben? Lloyd, are you here? You're not. Okay. Rod, welcome, and share with us your thoughts, please.
My name is Rod Brobeck. I'm from Sandy, Oregon. I'm the director of the, or executive director of the Oregon Wildlife Heritage Foundation, and we raise money for fish and wildlife projects in Oregon. I just got a short statement in support here. I guess I think you've heard everything that you could hear in favor of this this bill, but I'd just like to read this. The Oregon Wildlife Heritage Foundation, we support this bill. We feel a working and healthy Department of Fish and Wildlife is important to the state of Oregon. Increased fees for license and tags are needed to provide programs and opportunities for the people of Oregon that enjoy hunting and fishing. And the hunters and anglers of Oregon will support this bill.
Thank you. Okay. I appreciate that. By the way, how many members in your group?
Oh, we only have about 300 members. But last year we raised and spent about $700,000 on fish and wildlife projects in Oregon.
Wow.
So we're quite an active group.
Well, you're to be commended for that. I appreciate that. That's very good. Okay, Brett, is it L's Cascade Guide Service? Brett, are you here? Okay. Frank Warrens? Frank, are you here? Come forward if you would, sir. How about Dustin Sievers? Dustin, are you here? Is it Bill Drakely? Bill, are you here? Donald Wenzel? Don Heinzman? Dennis Stewart? Brad VanderZanden? Okay, we're going to start with you. Good to have you here. Thanks for coming by, Frank. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Frank Warrens. I'm representing myself today as a charter boat fisherman since 1976 out of the ports of Hammond and Warrenton. I'm a former member of the Pacific Fishery Management Council and a chair, past chair, past president of the Oregon Charter Association, and do all of my fishing offshore. I'm here today in support of the proposed fee increases for all of the reasons that you've heard earlier today, and urge you that your committee recommend a due pass on this bill to the full legislature. And there's one other implication that I didn't hear mentioned earlier today, and that is that the failure of or the closure of some of the hatcheries that have been proposed to be closed could have some serious implications towards the U.S.-Canada Pacific Salmon Treaty. And I haven't heard that fact mentioned earlier today, but that, in fact, is a reality, and there are implications that could have some serious repercussions without the production of these hatcheries.
Now, could you expand on that? How would that be probably?
The Pacific Salmon Commission or treaty requires has identified production of various hatcheries coastwide from Oregon, Washington, Canada, and Southeast Alaska, which all enter those stocks enter into the mix that is then shared by Canada and the U.S. And the loss of production of even a few of these hatcheries have an implication of changing the sharing scenarios between the U.S. and Canada. And we certainly have been working under an agreement with Canada in the past few years, and we certainly don't need to upset those agreements.
Have the Canadians been able to hold up their end of the bargain in terms of maintaining their hatchery in part of the share?
I'm not aware that they haven't, although they have suffered declines in stocks in past years, as we have. And fortunately, our stocks are on a rebound now, and I believe that this is pretty much a coastwide phenomena. I can't speak for Southeast Alaska, but certainly there are implications there that could be far-ranging if we allow hatcheries to close and thus the production from those hatcheries.
What would happen in your mind, and I guess it's a question I'll ask Director Ball at some later time, what would happen in your mind if we were unable to keep our part of the bargain? Would be a violation of the treaty. What happens if we violate that?
I believe the first step would be a renegotiation of the sharing between Canada and the U.S. And right now, I believe that the sharing is far more balanced than it was in my early years of being a member of the fishery. I can recall Canada harvesting 2 to 3 million coho, where we had harvests of less than 100,000, and we've currently are in a situation where we've achieved a much better balance in the sharing of the various stocks.
Well, Frank, thanks for giving us the heads up on that. That's something we probably ought to talk about a little further.
And there are people, I'm sure, that are far more versed in the complexities of that treaty than I am, for sure, but it is a concern for us.
All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate your testimony.
Thank you. Nothing
simple about this issue, that's for sure. Okay. Sarah Zalonis, are you here? Okay. and I'm having difficulty reading this. Is it Tim Jeng, J-E-N-G? Okay. How about Ben Scheel? Scott Amberman? Okay. Ken Evans, we're not going to worry about him. How about Grant Scheel? I don't say that. I just, Ken's a lobbyist. He's around here. I want to get through folks. Okay, Grant's not here either. I've already called him. And see, that was number 9. This is number 10. How about Greg McMillan? Dale Blanchard?
Hey.
Come forward, Dale. Greg. Hey, I've got a taker. That's great. How about Bill Hedlund? Bill, are you here? Okay, Dave Wiley? Dave? Wes Fitzwater? Let's start with you, Dale. Welcome. Thanks for coming today and being patient.
For the record, my name is Dale Blanchard. I live in West Lynn. There's nothing in my prepared testimony that you haven't heard already, so I'm just going to be very brief. And I just wanted to note that we filled this hearing room today, and then we filled another one, and then we filled another one on a Tuesday afternoon. So I hope the message is coming through. That's all I've got. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Dale, and I can assure you the message has came through loud and clear. Okay. Roger Gertenrich. Roger, are you here? Rod Harder's not here. How about Lance Fisher? Lance, are you here? Come forward, Lance. And Robert, is it Botten? Boda. Roger, would you come forward? Robert, would you come forward also? Welcome, sir. For the record, state your name.
My name is Lance Fisher, and good afternoon. Thanks for sticking around. I know that it's been somewhat tireless, I'm sure, or tiresome, should I say. My name is Lance Fisher, and I'm a professional fishing guide and a lifelong resident of the state of Oregon. As a professional guide, I draw nearly half of my modest yearly income from the North Fork of the Nehalem, Nestucca, and Tillamook area rivers. And may I add that these are all systems where proposed hatchery closures are on the plate right now. Today, my future as a professional fishing guide is in jeopardy due to proposed hatchery cuts. But it's not only my future that's in jeopardy, but also the people's businesses that I support when I work in these areas. My business alone spends thousands of dollars every year in places like Tillamook, Hebo, Pacific City, and Seaside. And my customers, when they fish with me in these towns, spend untold thousands on food, accommodations, and gas. To shut down these hatcheries would bring widespread financial hardship, bankruptcy, and unemployment to areas and an industry that has already suffered. I would hope that you might allow us as sport fishermen, industry-dependent workers, and business owners to increase our license and tag fees in order to keep these hatcheries open. I believe the proposed increase is minuscule and think that other sources of funding should also be looked at. Non-motorized boat licensing, an extra rod fee, and shellfish licenses should all be looked at to fund deferred maintenance of our hatcheries and future ODFW needs as the pressure on our resources increase with population growth in our state. I encourage all of you to support House Bill 2260. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Lance. Appreciate those thoughts. Robert, welcome for the record.
Chair Krupp, my name is Robert Boda. I'm the Executive Director of the National Foundation for Wildlife. I'm here to represent their views. For the record, I'm the only person who attended all 9 public town hall meetings and also sat on the External Budget Advisory Committee. I decided all 9 of the town hall meetings from Medford to Roseburg to LeGrand to Coos Bay to Portland, and all other meetings, not because I needed to get a life, because I truly care about the future of fish and wildlife and the outdoor experiences for me and all Oregonians.
You obviously heard the comment earlier in the week. Okay.
You understand that. I enjoyed the opportunity to see the public's comments about ODFW budget shortfall. The other reason we wanted to go to these meetings was to make sure the E.E. Wilson Wildlife Area would be fully funded. The department chose mothball closure of E.E. Wilson Wildlife Area due to E.E. Wilson Wildlife Area is the only wildlife area solely funded with other funds, and there is no matching funds from federal programs. E.E. Wilson Wildlife Area is fully funded with hunter and fisherman's license fees. The budget for E.E. Wildlife Area is $196,000 per biennium. There are over 50,000 recreational experiences per year at E.E. Wilson Wildlife Area, and over 100,000 per biennium. That includes hunting, fishing, bird watching, berry picking, jogging, walking, or any other activities that one chooses to do. This is a very well spent $196,000. If you figure that roughly cost $1.96 per visit at E.E. Wilson Wildlife Area, where else can you find all these opportunities for such a small price? What is really great is that hunters and fishermen money pay not just for the opportunities, their opportunities, but anyone who chooses to use the resources at E.E. Wilson Wildlife Area. After going to all the town hall meetings, the majority of the people were very concerned with the funding of hatcheries. Even the people from Bend and LeGrand came to support hatcheries. They do not want to see any hatcheries close. Next, they did not want to lose field staff. The reason was because if they take away field staff, we would lose hunting and fishing opportunities. The department said that they would have to be very conservative about hunting and fishing opportunities without these positions to help set harvest limits. The next was state police. Majority of the people did not want to see police cut. Most of the people did not realize that there was 12 unfilled positions at the time of these meetings in April. Each OSP wildlife officer roughly cost $145,000. Each cost $145,000. Officer goes through a special training for several months so that they would have the right training for wildlife officers. We could never figure out why these positions were not filled. And that's still left up today. I don't know.
It's a question we've asked a lot in past years.
Right. Last, landowner assistance programs. People believe that if they did not help landowners, that they would lose their relationships and landowners and would be detrimental for wildlife. Summary of all the public meetings was very large majority of fee increases to maintain a program that are currently being funded. And most meetings, there was one or two exceptions that people wanted cuts, but that was very, very rare. We at the National Foundation for Wildlife are in full support of saving these programs. If there is any cuts to be made, we want to make sure the E.E. Wilson Wildlife Area remains fully funded. Please support fish and wildlife resources in the state of Oregon and pass House Bill 2260.
Thank you, Robert. Appreciate it. Gentlemen, thank you both very much. Audubon Society, Bob, are you here? Come forward if you would. And Jared, you want to come forward? Oh, you got to go? All right. Well, we'll catch you another day. Welcome, Bob. Thanks for showing up today and being patient and maybe being our last speaker today. Sorry.
Well, thank you for waiting through all this. My name is Bob Salinger. I'm the director of the Audubon Society of Portland Wildlife Care Center, and I'm here today to speak on behalf of the Audubon Society of Portland and our 10,000 members in the Portland metro area. We do support the passage of House Bill 2260. There are controversial aspects of this bill. However, we think it's better to deal with those in a thoughtful and deliberative manner rather than across-the-board catastrophic cuts. And so we would encourage you to pass this bill. We're particularly pleased to see funds that will preserve the volunteer program, watershed managers, habitat biologists, and OSP positions, and these are all essential to preserving and protecting Oregon's wildlife. One thing this bill doesn't address is the wildlife diversity program, which we believe is the program that's been most decimated at Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and we really encourage the legislature to look for methods to preserve this program. It is decimated, and the last positions are really on the chopping block at this point, so we really hope there is a way to preserve those because those are essential as well. I'd be remiss if I didn't note the fact that this is a bill that is been placed on the backs of hunters and fishermen, and which I'm neither. In the short run, that's probably the most efficient way of dealing with a crisis. In the long run, that's not equitable, and it's not sustainable, and it doesn't get to all the issues at hand. And so I would very much encourage ODF&W and the legislature to start looking at other sources of funding, particularly non-consumptive passive users. That's an area that really hasn't been tapped, and it needs to be. That's something that will affect Audubon Society of Portland and our members directly, but we really support it. And I'm talking about things like a voluntary non-game stamp is a voluntary way of getting people to start to pay for bird watching and hiking and recreational opportunities. But in the long run, mandatory things like access fees, permit fees for things like wildlife rehabilitation that aren't currently charged for. We think this is essential, it's fair, and it's the right thing to do, and it's the only way we're really going to ultimately protect and preserve Oregon's wildlife. So thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Actually, I have to say I appreciate the Audubon Society's willingness to come forward and even approach that subject of non-consumptive passive users. It's actually something that has been talked about around this building for a while, and it kind of gets back to what we were talking about with the E.E. Wilson issue there, because there's a lot of folks who go out there and watch birds and so forth, and they're not really paying for that. There other folks are, and you know, maybe that's something that we ought to talk about seriously here.
Absolutely. We supported it since 1991, and we'd love to work with ODF&W and the state to promote that. We'd be very willing to work with the agency.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. Appreciate your testimony. Who have I missed? Okay. I've got this gentleman here, and then Jared and Al. Come forward, sir, please. Welcome, and for the record, state your name.
My name is Brad Dahm. I pour concrete for a living. I'm not affiliated with anybody. Don't just like to go hunting and fishing. Don't have a guide service. Don't own a sporting goods store. You know, nothing like that. You've heard a lot of good testimony today. I would simply like to add that I've got four boys and one little girl, and the best family time that we have, you know, the best father-daughter, father-son time is out on the rivers, out in the woods, camping, that sort of stuff. And certainly, I would be willing to pay $10 more, $20 more, whatever it takes to enjoy that opportunity.
Very good. That's actually not something we've talked about much today is you know, having your kids out there in that family time.
Well, I mean, it certainly beats Nintendo or, you know, anything like that.
Boy, amen to that, brother. Amen to that. Well, good comments. Thanks for sticking around this far. Jared, Al, whoever.
Well, Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. I have some testimony here I'll hand out after I complete my testimony. I have a you've heard a lot from our members today, and they've said it a lot more eloquently than I could ever say it. Our biggest concern of the association is to continue supporting the field biologists and to continue supporting the OSP officers and all the activities that we have with habitat and wildlife projects with ODF&W. In the 20 years I've been in this building, I've never seen a working relationship any better than with the ODFW field biologists and our members. We have 22 chapters around the state. I visited all of them, and every meeting I've ever attended, there's been a field biologist there. We have a one-on-one relationship with our membership, and we greatly support the work that they do. And we are concerned about the OSP staffing shortage and game enforcement. And I have a quote on the first page, at the bottom of the page, from Captain Cook. And I'd have a, if you have an opportunity to look at that, it sends a chill up and down your spine in relation to number of officers that are going to be in service and the rate of illegal kills in the state over since 1997. It's a chilling aspect of this whole process. So we do support 2260, and we hope it comes out of here with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thanks, Al. Please hand out that to David. Jared, welcome.
Mr. Chair, thank you. For the record, my name is Jared Broadfoot, here today representing Safari Club International of Oregon and absent members of the committee as well. I'll keep my comments brief as well. We are here to support House Bill 2260 and the fee increase. We are aware that Oregon's prices for our tags and licenses are fairly low, and our membership certainly supports adequately funding the department for all of their programs, adequately funding Oregon State Police, Fish and Wildlife Division to adequately enforce the wildlife laws that we have on the books. We are, you know, concerned that that we work together, that our members want to ensure that when we support a fee increase that we are able to work through all of the decisions which we have been able to through the Fish and Wildlife Commission and with staff. And we have experienced a great working relationship with the staff, with the director's office, and are happy to see that continue over the past years. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Well, since I'm the only one left, and it's about 10 minutes till, thank you both very much. I appreciate your, again, sticking around. Anyone else who'd like, we've got about 10 minutes left. Anyone else would like to, ma'am, come forward, please.
There were so many, I didn't sign up.
Wonderful.
But I've got 10 minutes.
Well, glad you, well, I didn't say you could take the whole 10 minutes. Thank you very much. And for
Thank
the record,
you,
state your name, ma'am.
My name is Darlene Klein-Dalby, and I reside in Eugene, Oregon.
Welcome.
Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'll keep this short and sweet. I do support an increase in fishing and hunting fees. Most of the angling community that I am familiar with support increases to help maintain the status quo at the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I am involved at the as a board member with the R&E committee. I'm a certified card-carrying master angler. I teach kids to fish. I'm involved with Northwest Steelheaders and the Cascade Fly Fishers. And so I have opportunities to visit with many, many anglers, and the ones that I associate with are more than willing to pay the fee increases. And I think our department really needs our help, and we're willing to step up for it. Just echoing what everyone I've heard today say, I thank you again for the opportunity to testify. Any questions?
Thank you, Darlene. I'm partial to that name. My mother's name is Darlene.
Oh, good.
you know, well, I appreciate your thoughts, and your last paragraph, your written testimony, says it all. And one of the points of resistance is you say an increase of fees of any type is never a popular step to take for legislators, and that really hits the nail on the head. It is difficult for us to consider passing a fee increase when Measure 28 just failed, and this state has the 50th worst economy in the nation. The other side of that coin is the testimony that's been brought forward today and the issues that are very real, and that if we don't have adequate capability at ODFMW, then we end up with, in fact, harming our economy even further.
Right.
And there's no question about that. So you have to understand, it puts us in a difficult position, those of us who feel very passionately about really trying to make prudent and common sense business decisions in this particular environment that we're in today in this economy. So I do appreciate again your thoughts, and thanks to all of you for sticking around as late as you have. I really appreciate that, and we were able to get through. I'm sorry we weren't able to get everyone. I'm sure a lot of folks looks like they left. We will hear the bill again, as we have some other folks who want to come back in testimony, testify, and I know that Director Ball has some additional questions, answers to questions that we have asked him to come forward with. He'll be bringing that to us probably very soon. Ray and I will work together to get this rescheduled as quickly as possible. We'd like to continue moving forward on this process. So once again, thank you all very much for your patience today. And we're going to close a public hearing on House Bill 2260, and we're adjourned. Thank you. Okay.